Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights at the round table, green dots where we're able. We'll routine to call the scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights at the round table, our shows are more mid table. So many times we give and rhyme to our quiet dancing able. We're off the bad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shazam's the Terrible. All rise for King Shazam's the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
Down under long enough, and you may come up with a chunk of uncut opal like this one. Our Seth Doane traveled to Australia to see for himself.
There's a treasure hunt going on down there. From above, the hundreds of thousands, some say a million or so holes, look like something an eager animal left behind. But humans drilled those holes, searching for opal. John Dunstan has been a prospector for nearly 50 years.
What kind of fortune are you talking about if you find opal?
You can find $1 million, no problems.
Really?
Yeah.
He's had to endure the blazing heat, not to mention the flies, and has not found any opal in 2 years. But there's that dream.
This is probably the only place in the world where you can be broke one day and rich the next.
This place, called Coober Pedy, is in Australia's great outback. It's an 8-hour drive to the closest city, and summertime temperatures soar to 120 degrees. Still, it became a destination after opal was discovered here 100 years ago.
This is the lifeblood for Coober Pedy.
Yeah, that's what basically built the town.
These opals.
George Busios polishes and sets opal gemstones into jewelry.
What we look for is bright colors. The brighter they are, the more brilliant the stone is, the more valuable they get.
As much as 80% of the world's opal supply comes from Coober Pedy's mines.
So you're chipping away and
yep.
Then all of a sudden you find
yep.
This. It's like striking gold.
Oh, very much so. Well, like winning the lottery.
Wow.
This story could almost end here if it weren't for something else that makes this town really, really unusual.
Did you ever imagine you'd be living underground?
No.
No way.
I wrote to my family and said, I'm living underground in Coober Pedy. My mother wrote back, return of post, don't be proud, son, we'll send you the fare home. They thought I was in a cave, you know.
Yep, it's not just the opals that can be found underground here, it's the people, too. Folks like Shelley and Rod Wells.
What's it like living underground? Do you even
beautiful.
Think about it?
Beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Why?
It's always cool. You know, soundproof, great acoustics. It's nice, and everybody here does it.
It's the preferred way to live in Coober Pedy underground.
There are hundreds of these so-called dugout homes burrowed into rock. They're cooled naturally, an escape from the brutal heat.
Is there anything claustrophobic about living underground?
Well, if you've got the height, not really.
Shelley runs a beauty salon down here. In town, there's the underground bookstore, an underground bar, and Debbie Clay showed us her underground business.
At the front here, we're about 10 metres. By the time we get to the back, we're at 22 metres below the hill.
Wow, so this hotel goes really deep.
It's really deep.
Clay took us into what will soon be the newest wing.
When you want to expand the hotel, you just dig deeper.
That's right.
And once you start digging in Coober Pedy,
it would take a long time to...
You never know what you might discover.
They found about $20,000 worth just across the top of here. And that
of opal.
You can see the opal color.
That opal find paid for their entire previous renovation in a section of the hotel which butts up against a 100-year-old mine.
So you really don't realize how big the open space is here until we turn the lights on.
It's a labyrinth back there.
That's right.
Tourism brings in more money than the opals these days, as people come to marvel at a place where residents even worship underground. And which is filled with a real range of characters.
Was this a mine or was this always a house?
No, it was a mine.
Meet Swampy. He lives underground next to an old Chevy truck he's working on. And explained how when you need a shelf for, say, the skull of your old dog Max, you just dig it out. Same thing for a second bedroom.
It's a work in progress.
I see. Tell me about the work. What's involved?
Basically, a rather large jackhammer.
The second bedroom is not far away.
Nah, we'll close the gates at night. We've got our own little kingdom here.
Rod and Shelley Wells say there's no better sleep than in a silent, windowless room. And that's all the better for dreaming of what they call opal fever.
I've tried a lot of things in my life, but when you dig out a few thousand dollars with a handpick...
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. Talk to a whole lots of people. Anyway, if you want to join in on the conversation on Skype, there's links available out there, or just add Shaziz or any of the Knights to the to your Skype contact, and then we'll add you to the call. Anyway, I posted in the chat room a couple links, one of which is over in Australia. There's an actual community that lives underground, and it all started off with... being way out in the outback, out in the desert where it gets really extremely hot. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so while they were out there looking for their treasure, which was the opal that, you know, that could make them rich overnight, then they figured out they started living underground in these caves. So they actually built a community down there. It's pretty impressive. But I also posted another link down there of... it's like six different strangest societies that live underground. And those are like not really on the good side of life, so to speak. This program right here, Knights of the Round Table, sometimes takes a life of its own just by the, you know, throwing a story out there to see where it finally leads you. And I'm thinking about society in general. I'm thinking about people falling through the cracks of society, and I'm thinking about people learning how to survive, and even going all the way back to the potential caveman days, you know, when people used to live in caves because it was cool in there and had shelter away from the elements and all that kind of stuff. There's just so many things that comes out of just one idea, such as, you know, I saw the link there this morning about the people in Australia living underground, you know, and the reason why they started living underground down there because of, you know, obvious searching for opals, and actually by digging new rooms for their place underground, they might potentially find a pocket of opals that makes them a lot of money. But like I said, it's Knights of the Round Table seems to take on a life of its own when these conversations get started. Been joined by, well, looks like a lost son, one knight there. I'm sure he'll be back. Sky Blue Eyes and Raymond. Raymond, are you there? He ain't got his microphone on. You can't hear the jet engine in the background.
Still warm, so you wouldn't complain about my squeaky chair.
Ah, squeaky chair.
All right.
Well, so anyway, there's just so many things running through my mind right now about this whole deal about society. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, and people, they will do what they need to survive. And as crazy as it may sound, you might be surprised at how many people in this world actually choose to live underground. You know, there's underground bunkers, underground cities, there's underground communities, underground homeless communities. It's just mind-blowing to me whenever you look around and you see the beauty of this earth and what could be out here, and most folks that end up living underground do it for one or two extremes. Either, you know, to get away from the apocalyptic scenario of life in general, or, you know, to go underground for mining and end up living under there. Or if you go, there's a lot of different states. Missouri's one of them. If you go there, they have caves that run for miles and miles underground, and there's entire cities and businesses underneath there. It's like two separate communities. I've seen a lot of apocalyptic style videos, doomsday scenarios, where people had literally had to go underground because life above ground was just so toxic and dangerous that they it wasn't survivable up there. And it kind of stinks to think that someday all of humanity may be forced underground. You know, we have a potential to literally work in harmony with nature and be able to have basically the equivalence of a Garden of Eden out here on the surface of the world. Now, I watched a couple different science fiction documentaries that people had to move to space and live in space stations. One of them was series 1, the 100, and because they had destroyed the Earth with a nuclear war, they had to move to space, and all these space stations had to survive up there for about 100 years. And then at some point, the spaceship started getting so old that they had to figure out whether or not life on Earth would be possible again, so they sent 100 what they would classify as prisoners down to Earth to see if the Earth was survivable. It turns out that people on Earth didn't all die during the nuclear deal. There was a lot of tribes and stuff going on, and so life wasn't very good down there, and there was a lot of weird stuff going on. You just have to go watch the series. I don't want to mess it up for you, but there was also another community that lived underground. And they'd lived underground for so long that they developed an intolerance for radiation. Even the sunlight would burn them, you know. And they did some terrible things to try to be able to get back up to the surface. But you just have to watch the video. I don't want to ruin it for you. Spoiler, so to speak. But anyway,
you keep going and you will ruin it. But it is really, really a good series.
Yeah, it is.
Very interesting.
But anyway, if you think about it, the whole concept of everything, you know, going to space to get away or going underground to get away, and what we have access to right now, I mean, it's just so incredibly amazing, you'd think that the world would want to protect it. And that people would actually fall through the cracks of societies and create another section of people that actually live underground, not because of want to be under there, but the necessity for shelter and basically companionship, other people, homeless people, whatever.
You know, the beautiful part about living underground or in a cave or whatever, you get so far from the entrance, you don't even need a door, and it maintains the same temperature year-round.
Yeah, there's definite benefits. There's definite benefits, such as, energy conservation. I mean, if you're living down there, it stays, like you said, the same temperature all year-round. But something to be said about being able to step out of your house into the sunlight every day. You know, what if you were like stuck down there? You couldn't go out because the air outside had become so toxic because man was just ignorant and didn't take care of the outside world.
I can see doing that, but at the exact same time, I mean, I can see why modern day society, man, with the atmosphere the way it is, I can't see why somebody wouldn't want to live underground. I mean, just because you live there doesn't mean that you can't come out into the sunlight. No. It's like going into your house.
Yeah, I see your point. And
we talk about energy and free energy and free this and that and another and how to maintain it, how to acquire it. I mean, that is a really fascinating idea. I've seen videos of people that dug their own caves and actually dug. It's unbelievable. Some of these people are like geniuses and artists at the same time. They'll dig a cave, but they decide they want a couch over here or a chair over there. Well, they don't go buy a couch or buy a chair. They just buy the cushions. They carve the daggone couch while they're carving out the room.
Yeah.
You know, their bed, the same thing. I mean, you know, they just leave this chunk of rock and the same size and shape of a bed, then put a mattress and springs on it. I mean, it's amazing what these people do. Their kitchens, they actually cut the cabinets out of the walls and just put doors on them.
Yeah, that's what they showed in the documentary of the one about the Australian living out there, and I think the name's Petey or something like that. But
that I saw where the guy actually, he made his furniture out of the rock as he cut the room. In other words, the rock was part of the room.
Yeah, they make
chairs, the kitchen table, the whole legal 9 yards.
He said if you needed a shelf.
And an artist.
He said if you need a shelf, you just dig it into the wall. Anyway, if it's your choice, because it would be kind of neat to have your own bat cave with your mad science lab and stuff like that. That's cool. But if it came down to a point where it was a necessity, you had to live underground because it was just too toxic to live outside. You know, that's the part where I was talking. I wouldn't want that portion of it. I wouldn't mind having me an underground bunker. It'd be kind of neat. But
yeah.
If it was an underground bunker because you had to survive, you hear a lot about doomsday preppers and stuff building themselves underground bunkers, so they could survive under there for 10, 20 years if necessary. And that basically implies that, the outside world is either too dangerous or inhospitable. And then you have segments of societies who have literally fallen through the cracks of society, some being sick and have to live underground. There's a saying in my book of faith talking about being your brother's keeper, and trying to take care of one another and that kind of stuff. If somebody chooses to live the homeless life and just wander the land and be free, that's a good thing. If that's what makes them happy, that's fine. But if they really want a home, but they just can't find themselves, they can't find a way to get back up there on their feet, and I think that's when humanity, good people of the world, step forward and try to give them something to stand on, if you understand what I'm trying to say. There's a segment of society that literally have fallen through the cracks of society and live in some pretty terrible conditions. There's a segment of society who chose to live in caves because, like the Australia, they found opals down there. And opals, a pretty valuable gemstone. And, you know, so they, because they're working in the desert trying to find these things, and it's hotter than all get out there in the desert, well, they figured out they could live underneath there. And while in the process of digging new rooms, they might actually strike it rich. And if you look at some of the homes that they built inside there, they got little shops and bookstores and stuff like that, and restaurants, and they actually have a tourist deal where people come to see, you know, the place. So they built an economy underground. It's pretty right. neat. But there's also a darker side to it. So on both sides of the coin, there's a plus and a minus. I just think that if the world in general was to utilize all the resources in a proper manner, we could literally build cool underground homes where we wouldn't have to have above ground structures and make it really nice. But I don't know. I'm trying to find the words to explain how you balance out the scales of justice, the scales to make everybody.
Can I add something here?
What happened? You still there? Uh-oh.
The sound went dead, Scabaloo.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, until he gets back there, I don't know what happened with his Skype. I know he had something brilliant to say.
Yeah.
Sky Blue.
How's my connection sounding?
Oh, there you are. You're back. Go ahead.
Hey.
Terrible.
Go ahead.
No.
Yeah. Hopefully, is my connection still good?
Yeah. Go ahead and talk.
Oh. Back in 2 minutes. I'm going to reboot.
All right. Cool. Yep. That's part of it. That's part of the Knights of the Round Table. Like, you got a love of technology. Anyway. Yeah. So. Like I said, this story take on a life of its own.
Oh, am I coming through now then?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, excellent. The point I was going to make is that we need sunlight.
Sunlight, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Sunlight's for vitamin D or E? Which is it?
D.
Okay. Yeah, we do need sunlight. And I guess, you know, we were meant to be out here in the... I don't know if you want to call it a terrarium. However, we was meant to be out there in nature and part of nature and being grounded and enjoying life and living and just experiencing everything. I don't think we were meant to be like dug into the ground and hiding in the, you know, in the earth or anything like that. But if you look through history, there's been a whole lot of underground cave systems, cities built underground, all over place. It's amazing when you look and see how many people in history have actually built communities in caves underground. So,
right.
You know, in some sense it might be a survival thing, and some it might just be a comfort thing because it's the environment. We adapt to our environment pretty well, you know. But I don't know. I guess I'm going to always be one of them above grounder kind of people. I mean, I don't mind having me a bat cave where I can go down there in my mad science laboratory, you know, and that kind of stuff. I just don't ever want it to end up being because of, you know, situations like falling through the cracks of society or having to go down there because mankind had got so ignorant that it destroyed all the, nature around you to the extent where now you can't really survive on the top. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yes, I do.
If it was because we're wanting to try to, you know, make a perfect energy efficient community and live together and be able to come in and out and go outside anytime you want, that's cool. I mean, imagine living in a prison, so to speak, you know, and you only had so far, so many walls that you could go to before you couldn't go out, you couldn't leave. You just had this one little area. You was, it's not necessarily claustrophobic, but it's you're confined. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yes, I do.
Mankind wasn't meant to live like that. Meant to be able to run free. You know, we talk about freedom and being able to go wherever you want and see all the beauty. You know, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there. I can't even pronounce this. Like, Derinkuyu Underground City. It's an ancient multi-level underground city in the, I hope I'm pronouncing that, Derinkuyu district of, why did they gotta have all these crazy names? It's somewhere in Turkey. Anyway, extended to a depth of approximately 60 meters, 200 feet. It's large enough to have sheltered as many as 20,000 people together with their livestock. See, that makes you kind of wonder why they had to go down underground like that, you know? Has mankind done this before? Have we, like, destroyed our planet so bad that we had to go ride out the storm underground?
You know, the one that he posted in there, I think I just saw an article on that here about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Absolutely amazing how huge this thing was. It was all carved out of a mountain, inside of a mountain.
Well, see, that's pretty neat, man.
They went outside to work. They worked the fields and so forth. They weren't trapped. It was just a way to build a home that would last. In fact, it did last. It was several hundred years ago, and it's still there, intact.
Well, it's pretty neat. I mean, like I said, it's kind of a bittersweet kind of deal here.
There's an old saying that almost describes what we're talking about, and that is everybody wants to be a farmer until they have to do it for a living.
Yeah.
Well, you know, want to live in a cave until you have to.
Yeah.
Because the air damn dirty and nasty, you have to live in the cave. No, then it would become a chore. But as long as you don't have to, then it would be great. Because that way you can leave and go outside anytime you wanted.
Well, I guess that's what I've been trying to stumble on my words to try to say. If you had to do it, it wouldn't be very pleasant. But if you chose to do it and you had the option to be able to come and go as you like, see. This is why I get frustrated with the leadership of this world. You know, it's almost either they're completely ignorant or intentionally trying to keep the people at such a state that they can further an agenda. It's like the whole order out of chaos thing. All right. Well, you create a ruckus, a really bad chaos, and then you have everybody. Hey, cause you step forward. Yeah, we got the answers. We can fix all this, right? Yeah. You just follow our rules. And here, wear this number, that kind of thing. You know, it blows my mind because of the things that we are capable of doing and the resources that are available to us. If we wanted to live in beautiful underground cities, we have that potential. But if we have to live in beautiful underground cities because the outside is destroyed, there's something wrong with the picture. You see what I'm trying to say here?
I see exactly what you're saying, and I think everybody else does too. So let's even carry a little bit further or change the subject.
Oh, we're not changing the subject.
All right, then let's carry a little bit further.
See,
thing is, if you have to do it, it's unpleasant. But if you choose to do it, it could be a very, very happy and pleasant lifestyle. It depends on how much artistic ability you have and how you do it. And where you're located, how far is it from your job? I mean, if you bought a piece of land that was really rocky, but you still had enough dirt on the surface to grow crops, but there was a hill that was nothing but a solid rock, cut your house out of it. I mean, daggone, man, it would... the sun would heat the rock up during the day very slowly. The rock would maintain that heat through the night. That's how they, that's why they built sod houses. They didn't just go out and cut a bunch of sod and stack it up. It had to be a certain size, a certain thickness, because the sun would heat it up during the day out in the desert or the Great Plains. The sun would heat it up during the day and cool it off at night. It would get so cold at night, you'd have to put on a coat. During the day, you'd be sweating your head off, your brains out. But in that house, that sod house, it was just as cool all day as it was all night.
Yep. Stephen Gibbons posted another one in there. I believe it was Stephen. Let me take a look real quick. Yep, it was Stephen. He said it's an article. It says there is an incredible lost underground city located beneath the pyramids of Giza, and despite the fact that only a few know about it today, it was extremely well documented in the past. And it's got some pictures down there of a massive underground complex. See,
the thing is, if you live out in the desert, then that's what you want to do.
Well, sure, that's the thing.
You want to live underground, so it's because it's cooler, more comfortable.
That's the thing. See, we have the potential to survive because we have this ability to adapt to situations. When the air outside is bad, or when it's hotter, then all get out. When we need protection from the weather, we have knowledge and technology that is able to literally build incredible underground cities that would protect you from the hostile environment, so to speak, such as being living in the desert. You know, in Australia, they did it because they was wanting to find opals, and it just turned out to be a whole lot bigger deal. Now they got literally an economy to where they can live underground. They got tourism that comes in to see this underground tunnel system city, and you know, in other places in the world, it was pretty much because they had to, because of the environment outside. We have this potential to be able to adapt to any place on Earth to be able to live. There are people, let's see, I think it's, what is the name of the, Vienna? Where's Vienna at?
Vienna.
You know,
I think it's the west coast of Africa, the continent of Africa.
Where essentially the city streets are water. They drive around in.
That's Venice.
Venice, that's what I was trying to think about.
Yeah,
so they can live on the water. And then you have people down by the river who literally have houses that will float when the water rises. And they'll come back down when the water recedes.
Right.
So no matter where you are on Earth, people, necessity being the mother of invention, people learn how to adapt and be able to live anywhere. You know, it doesn't matter. We could live on the moon if we wanted to. I mean, we could build, you know, cities up there and pipe in our own oxygen or whatever. And it's just incredible what mankind is capable of. And so I can see a world that we would have a brilliant society where you had above ground cities, below ground cities. I mean, we could live all over this planet, under the sea, you know, in the mountains, or just anywhere we chose. And the unlimited resources available around this world, everybody, there's no reason for nobody to be able to have a home if they wanted a home. Because if you got room underground to live, you got room above ground to live, you got room on top of the water to live, you got room under the water to live. This planet could sustain so many more people than you know possibly imagine. There's folks out there that say the world's overpopulated. Those folks aren't very bright.
No, they're not.
Because we could sustain probably 10 times the population and still be doing just fine if we really chose to do so.
You know, there are areas in Siberia where it doesn't get all that cold in the wintertime, and They're bigger than the state of Texas, way two, three times bigger than the state of Texas. No human being has ever set foot on. And they're talking about overcrowding? Come on, man. Give me a break. Look at Canada.
You got
10, 15 square miles for every human being in the country?
You got a segment of society that have literally fallen through the cracks of society for whatever reason, you know. Maybe they fell on hard times. Maybe they found themselves, addicted to drugs or alcohol or whatever, and things just kind of completely went to heck in a handbasket. And there's no place for them to go but underground. You know, they can't sleep above ground because the law enforcement will haul them to jail for vagrancy. And then that changes the whole deal there. See, now you're in that confinement we were talking about a second ago. Now you're forced to live in a jail cell because you can't afford to live in your own home. Or you can't just go lay on a park bench when you're tired, otherwise you get hauled into the jailhouse for vagrancy. You see, it's sad that the world actually comes down to that, to where, you know, you can get in trouble for feeding the homeless. You know, under laws and regulations, there's all kinds of restaurants that obviously don't want you feeding people in front of their restaurant because they pay money to have a business where they feed people, and they get paid to feed people. And so people don't want to come by and see a bunch of homeless people living in front of the restaurant that they want to eat at, because it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind kind of deal. And so they will use the law enforcement to basically relocate the people, whether it be, you know, move along or go to jail kind of thing, and ship the homeless people either away from that building or into a jail cell. And now that person doesn't have a choice but to live inside essentially a cave. Can't just get up and go when you want, that kind of thing. So it boggles my mind that we have all of what we have, and that there would be anybody in this world who would be in need of anything. You know, some people would say, now there's people out there in this world that are just so lazy that they won't do nothing for themselves.
Right.
And we're not talking about those people. We're
14
talking
out of 15 homeless people you see on the side of the road with signs saying I will work for food. They're not homeless. They have to actually pay $35 to get a permit to beg on the streets with a sign. You can't get them to work.
Well, I don't necessarily think that's across the entire board. I don't think necessarily that's in all the 50 states of the U.S. or even in the rest of the world. I don't think that all the homeless people out there are just lazy people that just won't.
I didn't say all of them. I said 14 out of every 15 are lazy.
Well,
They make more money, three, four times more money standing on a corner with a sign saying, we'll work for food, than they do if they got a job. They make $200,
$250
a day.
Maybe,
but they feel bad for them.
Maybe, but there might be a segment of those individuals who are basically using, playing people's hearts like a banjo to get things, but I don't believe it's as high as 14 out of 15.
I know it's that high.
Well, you know,
They did an article in the newspaper here years ago. There is a lawyer in Dallas, a lawyer. He charges $100 an hour for his time back then. I don't know what he charges today. But every Thursday, when most lawyers go out to the golf course, he puts on his raggedy clothes, takes his paid-for Porsche, and drives down and parks a half a block away from his favorite corner, gets out with his raggedy clothes and his little sign saying, we'll work for food, and he says he makes more money in 3 hours standing on that corner than he would all day long doing lawyer work.
Well, I've seen some documentaries similar to that, but then again, you know, I'm going to be kind of like, I don't know, I don't want to say I want to be the devil's advocate or nothing like that, because, you know, I've been fooled once or twice. I ain't been a perfect judge of character, and being able to distinguish whether somebody has good intentions or bad intentions, I just go by the kind of concept where I don't judge people by the way that they look. Or, you know, if I see a homeless person out there, it doesn't matter to me whether that homeless person is a drug addict, an alcoholic, an attorney that's driving a Cadillac or whatever. It's not for me to judge whether or not this guy, you know, is a good person or bad. If it's laid on my heart to help that individual out, and I have the opportunity to do so, funds, I will give them money. You know, and some people say, well, why'd you give them money? They're just going to go buy drugs with it. Well, maybe they will. Maybe that's their only form of comfort. You know, maybe I should have went a little step further and actually went with them and sat down and had a meal or something. I don't know.
You know, I'll tell you what, there was about, I used crew cab pickup trucks, and there was like four or five of us in a truck. It was Friday afternoon. We were going somewhere to cash our checks and grab us a couple of beers. We had some beer in the truck, and we come to this corner, and there's this hobo standing there. I guess it was. He was holding a sign. He said, "Why lie? I just want a beer." So we gave him two beers.
at least he was honest about it.
Yeah. I mean, but somebody like that, you want to help him, you know? He just wants a beer. Thank God. He's homeless. He has no money. Back on, if I didn't have any money on me, and somebody walked up and handed me a beer, I'd want to kiss them on the cheek.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's a bit about a difference between choosing to be away or not choosing to be away, being forced into an issue where you have to live underground. There's no option, you know. Like, there's a section of society that had fallen through the cracks of society that literally live in old abandoned, you know, tunnels or sewer drains or stuff like that.
You know, I don't mind helping people that are homeless if I know they're homeless. I was in downtown Dallas one time late in the afternoon, really angry because I had to go look at this job to bid it, and I was angry because it was getting really close to rush hour traffic, and I hate driving in rush hour traffic. Anyway, this little old lady come up to me, dirty clothes, nasty, raggedy-ass hair. Anyway, "Sir, could I wash your windows for $1? I haven't eaten in 2 days. I said, "Yeah, go ahead." So she got through washing the windows, did a really bad job. But anyway, she came up, "Is that okay?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, it is." I handed her $1, and she said, "Thank you, sir." I said, wait a minute. I said, "Let me see that dollar." She looked at me real strange with sad eyes, and she handed me back the dollar, and I handed her a $50 bill. That woman jumped through the window, my side door window, my foot, jumped me around the neck. "Oh, thank you. I mean, she was unbelievable. I said, "Now, I just need you to do me a favor, okay? I said, use that money, get you a motel room tonight. Tomorrow you get up, you take a bath, you get up, you go to a Salvation Army and buy you some clean clothes." I said, "And you get to a restaurant and get you a really good meal." I'll do it. I said, "Okay, do you promise?" But I mean, that made me feel so good to help somebody, you know? But at the same time, when I see somebody standing on the corner with a sign, homeless, jobless, and he's wearing $200 blue jeans, $150 designer shirt, $300 Nikes. No, And he's healthy as hell. Looks like he's in his late 20s, early 30s. No,
Well, like I said,
I just want to get out of the car and hit him with a baseball bat.
Like I said, Raymond, that's not very nice. Like I said, Raymond, look, there are people who take advantage of every situation and the kindness of others. But the grand scheme of things, the overall picture of humanity in general, the entirety of, if you step back and look at the big picture, And you see what we're capable of doing, where we're able to literally, if need be, we can live in the desert, in caves under the desert. If we need to dig a hole in the side of the mountain and build a bunker, we can do it.
Yeah.
We can build stations in space, and we can build underground underwater cities and ships that go live entire cities that, like, if you ever been on an aircraft carrier, it's a city, it's a floating city. There's like 5,000 or more people on one aircraft carrier.
Most of them carry 6,000. The nuclear entire aircraft carriers carry a crew of 6,000 people.
Yeah, but do you realize how many people 6,000 people is?
Yeah.
All right, now you got 6,000 people on there, a place for all of them to sleep. You got stores, you got airplanes, you got tools, generating systems. Amazing what we can do to build a huge, basically a weapon of war, a city on water. And it doesn't stop there. What are the capabilities of what mankind has been able to accomplish? You know, they say we evolved from monkeys, but I don't subscribe to that kind of scenario. I just don't see us outside of acting like monkeys and treating each other poorly. You know, I don't see us being like that. Throughout history, you know, you look in some of these old ancient cities, like Stephen Gibbons posted in there in the chat room about underground cities beneath the pyramids, and you know, in Turkey and all kinds of other different places out there. It's just mind-blowing how a bunch of monkeys could get together and build underground cities.
Right.
Some of them are like incredible. I mean, if you actually look at the structural integrity of it, I mean, it don't tell me that a bunch of monkeys got together and decided to build the you know, underground amazing bat cave or whatever. You know, it just don't tell me that. It tells me at some point in society that there was a reason why everybody had to go underground, because either there was too much war going on above ground, or the weather becomes so hostile that they were forced underground, or maybe even for luxury reasons they decided it would be better to live underground because it's cooler underground, or whatever. There's all kinds of reasons why people end up going underground. And this is like not just modern day society. It goes all the way back to ancient societies that lived underground. I mean,
you know,
what a better bunker, what a better fortress that you could get to keep an army at bay by making a underground city with only two ways in, you know, or two ways out, that kind of thing.
Think about this. I mean, for example, the opal miners in Australia going underground. Duh, they're out in the desert. There's no fuel to burn to get warm at night. It's so hot during the day you can't hardly breathe, and they're mining opals and they're digging in the ground. Then why not?
Like I said,
it only makes good common sense. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to buy a generator and haul gasoline or diesel fuel out into the desert so you can run your air conditioner? No, just go underground.
But like I said, there's a plus and a minus to every side of this story and picture. That's why this,
every coin has two sides.
That's why this this Knights of the Round Tables get to be so fascinating, because the shows always take on a life of their own. And if it's a case that people want to go under, live underground, like I said, I'm all on board with that. That's pretty cool, because you can use the strength of the rock to literally build structures that, you know, will stand the test of time.
You know, the thing is, I mean, think about this a minute. Poor people trying to scratch out a living in West Virginia, Arkansas, the western part of Virginia, the western part of North Carolina. You've got mountains out there. These people are fighting to try to survive. Why not dig a hole in the side of a mountain and live there? It's very comfortable. Think about this a minute. How much energy do you have to buy, pay for, or work for in order to heat your home during the winter? How much energy do you have to buy, work for, or steal, or whatever, to run your air conditioner in the summertime? I mean, you're talking a lot of physical energy to work to earn that much money.
Sure. If you go down to, it's not too far from where I'm at. There's places in Missouri, there's caves all over, some natural, some man-made. A lot of man-made caves.
I'd like to find one that's been abandoned and buy it.
They've done a lot of undermining down there, limestone caves and stuff that go on for miles. And there's actually a conspiracy theory where there's, the government for years have been building these underground cities all over the U.S. And there's also a conspiracy where underground cities are basically at war with one another so that somebody would have the ultimate power or something. Let's say worst case scenario, apocalyptic, World War III, you gotta rush underground to survive because the outside's gonna be nuked and all that kind of stuff. And you would be surprised at the stories that you'll hear if you actually go out there and look down the rabbit hole and see what people are talking about underground bunkers and cities, like under the Denver airport, there's supposed to be a massive one under there, and tunnels that go all the way to Washington, D.C., and all over the place. Basically the equivalence of them preparing ahead of time for something that they're going to start so that all the elite can run up underneath the bunkers and survive, which would leave the rest of us out here at our own peril, so to speak, have to try to survive in a nuclear winter or whatever. You know, however you look at it, the whole thing boils down to human choice. The things that we could be doing with this world as opposed to the things that we are doing with this world. It just,
it's mind-boggling. I just figured it out. The average fan has to work 2 months out of the year just to heat and cool his home.
Well, sure, there's a plus for living underground.
Yes, there is. There's a big plus.
But in some communities, it's not such a plus. It's not so pretty.
You take 2 months out of the year if you live on top of the ground just to heat and cool your home. Then number two, your home 9 times out of 10, or shit, more than that, is made out of wood. So now you got to pay for a pest control guy to come out and treat it for termites, wood boring ants, and that kind of thing, where termites and wood-boring ants don't eat rock. The pluses of living underground, not necessarily underground, but in a cave, the pluses of living in it and trying to live a modern-day life, they're way, way outnumber any kind of inconvenience you could possibly think of. Way outnumbered.
Yep.
I mean, so many pluses to living in a cave is unbelievable.
Sure, there's a lot of, like I said, energy reasons why. But did you know there are people who actually work with underground communities that take them fresh water and. And you're trying to type a message. Anyway, there are people who work with some of these underground communities that they'll bring them water and blankets and stuff like that and food and try to help them out. But imagine if the whole entire governmental system was set up to, if somebody needs to be needs a place to live, and that they choose to live underground, that you could literally go down there and you could actually make it comfortable for them to live underground. You see what I'm saying? I mean, they don't have to live in filth with dirty clothes and all that kind of stuff unless that's what they choose. I mean, there are people that I've met in my life that they don't seem to care about cleanliness living conditions and that kind of stuff. But
right.
That's a personal choice. What I'm saying, though, is we have access to all this vast resources all over the entire planet, and yet we see people that are living in misery that don't like children. They don't have a choice. They're just victims of circumstance. If they happen to live in a dry, arid climate or a desert or, you know, a dusty spot and there ain't no water, they're, you know, the parents, for whatever reason, left them in this kind of position to where, you know, now there's like that picture that I showed there about the baby. All right, the baby that was all skinny and just almost didn't even look human because of the way that it was set up, or the way that the baby was, you know, raised up or whatever, or lack thereof. Let me pop that picture up there so I can... Anyway, there's a picture posted on the Knights of the Round Table podcast of a little baby. And when you see this picture, it's heart-wrenching to see the picture of the baby in the state of affairs that it was in. I mean, it was sickly and just so skinny. It just, how could you even visualize a baby being in that condition? He's all skinny and his muscles is gone, and he's got to be living in the worst possible form of hell on earth that you can imagine. You know, trying to go around and scrounge for just something, some sort of life-giving substance, water or food or whatever. And this lady's standing there, she's feeding this baby some fresh water, and then it shows a year later that this baby's in, you know, really beautiful clothes. He's got a little backpack on, he's all healthy, and he's got some weight on him again after, you know, years of doctoring and medicine and all that kind of stuff. That's the kind of deal I'm talking about, Raymond. That kind of deal right there. That is a living miracle right there. Between that lady and that child, what they were able to accomplish to bring that child from that state of affairs all the way up to this one. And the mere fact that that child ever got in that state is what disturbs me the most.
There was no need for that.
Yeah. That's the point I've been trying to get to with this whole living underground thing. You know? Is that how are we going to let our world get to such an affair that we're forced, literally forced, to live underground in order to survive? When we have right now before us a vast amount of resources and potential and possibilities, and we're able to do the things that we do. If we want to build an underground city, we got the power and the knowledge to do it. We know how to build structures using geometrical shapes such as arches that are so strong that they'll withstand earthquakes and everything else. We have the knowledge on how to run electrical and computing systems and telecommunications and all that kind of stuff. And if we allowed the world outside to become the equivalence of what that child is in that first picture, why would we want to allow our world and our people of this world to literally get to that stage? You see what I'm saying? It took this lady to come out of her own personal life and recognize that there was a problem and nurse this child back to health. It's the same exact thing that's going to, at some point in time, cause humanity to be forced to do the same thing. If this makes any sense to you whatsoever.
The average person that wouldn't want that.
You're right.
Okay, it's the big people in power that caused it. Well, they deliberately caused that to happen. You know, there's been, at least three out of every five shiploads of food, clothes, and so forth that the United States puts together and people contribute money, three out of five of those ships are commandeered by the government of the country they send it to. It's put in warehouses and used to buy votes from people that are more well off.
Yeah, there's
there are people that doctors and nurses that volunteered to go over to Africa in one of these countries where they had these refugees from another country. So people were sending food and stuff over. Doctors and nurses were volunteering their time to go over there and help doctor these people that were in these refugee camps. Barbed wire fences around the refugee camp. Tens of thousands of people there dying, 100, 200 a day from just malnutrition. No food. And right across the street were rows and rows and rows of warehouses full of food and clothes. Sent over there free of charge.
That's the point. It just sickens me because it just should not be. It shouldn't be like that.
No, it shouldn't.
You know, and how it is that we would allow any governments of the world to commit such atrocities. If you look in this first picture of the little baby down there, the lady's feeding the water to, and you look behind that little baby, there are people walking by. There are other human beings that are walking by just looking at them like, oh, what's going on over there? She's feeding this little witch child. You know? And yeah. It just drives me nuts that any human could literally see another human in that state of affairs. And for people who are supposedly governments of the world that would allow people to starve just right, not even a few feet away from where there was a store of food. You know, this is the ridiculousness of our world that we live in, that anybody out there would have to do without anything for any reason under the sun. We got such amazing potential. We know how to make things easier for us. We know how to build machines that can lift thousands of pounds, several stories in the air. We know how to build flying machines. We know how to build weapons of war. We know how to build all kinds of things. But one thing we don't know how to do, that we haven't seemed to figure out how to do, is to build inside each and every heart of all the people of this planet something that is like a bridge between them and what's right and what's wrong. And that is that somebody could literally walk past a child in that state of affairs and not do anything, because they're so self-absorbed and contained with what's in their own worries, their own world, their own life. Well, you know, that's not my child. I'm not responsible. You see what I'm saying? It's not my part of the world, so I'm not responsible.
I'm going to tell you something right now. I was going to say the American people, but actually, no. Throughout the world, for every bad person, there's 200 good ones.
Sure. But why would us 200 good ones allow the 200 bad ones to just...
There you go. Now you're cooking, Jackie.
I'm just...
Why? Because they're complacent as hell. They'd rather just reach in their wallet and push out money than to actually jump in and help.
Yeah, well, this lady did something that, to me, I classify as a miracle. A miracle, yeah. Right there before your very eyes on Earth that, you know...
She got her dead dove off the couch and did something. And she did something good.
And imagine if all the 200 good people of the world did exactly what that lady did, was go out and find a problem and fix it. Not wait for a problem to come to you. Go out and find it and fix it.
Fix it.
In this world, there's all kinds of problems that need to be fixed. And yep. There's all kinds of people that are capable of fixing it, because you would be surprised at the power that is within each and every one of you. You know, somebody said, it was a pastor of a church that I just listened to a podcast of, and said that no man will ever be able to bring about peace on this earth. That no man would ever be able to do that. And, you know, according to some of the scriptures in the books, you would say that he was justified in saying that. But wait a second here, folks. Seriously, no matter which side of the fence you believe, whether there's a divine creator or not, or anything like that, that no man could ever bring about peace, you apparently, you know, miss something inside there, because in my book of faith, it says that no man knows the time or day that he'd come like a thief in the night. That you wouldn't know. So you don't know when doomsday is. You don't know when the last day is. You don't know when the end of the world is coming. So what you do between that time and that time, first off, are you going to sit idly by because no man can bring about peace and not try to bring about peace? I hope you understand the point.
Yep.
If you're going to live in hell and allow hell to just run amok throughout your entire existence, then you might as well prepare yourself for the day that you have to go underground. Because it will get that bad. And when you see a baby in that condition, and in the background of the picture, you see people walking by as if that baby doesn't matter, that's proof of what I'm saying. That we are heading down that path. And that we will have to go up underground someday. And it sickens my heart to think that with all that we are have been given, however you think it got here, whether by accident or just chance or divine creation, however you think it is, that you don't know when doomsday is going to get here. You don't know when the last day is going to get here. And if you don't think that it's possible that a man can bring about peace on earth, then you ain't even tried. Because if I can bring peace in my little circle, then I should be able to help to spread that peace throughout the land. And maybe no one man could bring about peace on earth, but all the men of the women of the earth could bring about peace on earth. If we stop being complicit with the way that the system is set up to allow people to hide food not more than a few feet away from where somebody's starving to death.
Right.
See, somebody said to me one time that, you know, if God was so loving, why would He allow people to starve to death in this world?
Well, He gave us free choice.
Back up and take your own responsibility for your own actions. When's the last time you fed somebody who was hungry? When's the last time you went out of your way to find somebody homeless and give them some clothing and some shelter? That's the deal. Because, like Raymond said, we were given free will. We were given free reign. We were given dominion over the earth to run and do whatever, to be the caretakers of the land and the animals and one another. And we squandered it. We squandered it for our own selfish needs because, you know, I got my food, I got my shelter. It's not, it doesn't affect me. It's somewhere else. Why ain't those people over here doing something about it? Well, if those people ain't doing something about it, then people like yourself need to do something about it. And if the governments of the world are stealing food, life-giving substances such as water and food and clothing and shelter from the people, well, then those governments aren't governments, are they? They're criminals.
Whoa. They're keeping it from the people? They're keeping it from the people that it was given to.
Yeah.
So they're keeping it from them. They're stolen. They're thieves. It doesn't belong to them. It was donated generously by people in other countries that were better off. And it was meant for the poor. It was meant for the refugees. And they're dying 200-300 a day of starvation, malnutrition, disease, because somebody stole what was given to them.
Yeah. Well, like I said, folks, there's a lot of people out there that will justify their lack of actions by the fact that the system is so strong and already preordained that it's going to be bad that they weren't willing to do anything about it. Now, I don't care what my book of faith says. I honestly don't. As far as what is preordained and is going to be, may or may not be, it doesn't matter to me if God Almighty Himself tells me that no matter what you do, there is going to be atrocities across the land. There's going to be terrible things. It doesn't matter to me. Because if I learned anything from all of this right here, I know that in my book of faith it says that no man knows the time or day, that it'd come like a thief in the night. And I don't know when tomorrow doomsday is going to show up or not. But if I'm any kind of decent person whatsoever, I can't stand idly by and watch evil run amok throughout the world. I can't stand idly by and not do something to feed that baby. Looks like we lost our Skype call. I'm going to have to recall everybody again. Anyway, like I was saying, if you know the world is messed up, and you know that there's all kinds of terrible things in this world that need to be fixed, you got a choice. You either stand against evil or you stand with evil. And my heart tells me I want to stand against evil and I want to stand up for what is right in the world, no matter what the cost. And I may not be able to fix it. I may not be able to do anything to resolve the problems of this world. But as long as I got a voice, as long as I got some sort of anything that could potentially make any kind of difference whatsoever, then I feel it's not only my obligation, it's my duty, but it's also my honor to try to be a servant to my fellow brothers and sisters out there in this world. I see things in a whole complete different fashion than most folks out there, because I see hope in what would otherwise be considered to be a lost cause. Why would you want to sit idly by, or even, like I said, mentioned in this picture, when people in the background of this picture are walking by, and they see this baby in this kind of shape, they should all be concerned. They should all be trying to feed this baby. Nobody's running up there trying to put a shirt around this baby. Nobody's up there trying to take care of this baby. But one lady out of a crowd of all the people, there's looks like at least five or six people in that picture, including a couple children. I know it can't just be me. I know there's others in this world that feel exactly like I do. That somehow or another, even if all is going to be lost, even if there's no hope or redemption of mankind, that all the way through this entire process, you know, it talks about in my good book, it says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. And when I hear words like that, it's just, you know, I know that some power has my back, that I'm not going to have to worry about. Some power has my back, and as long as I got right on my side and love in my heart, I can walk this terrible earth that we have to contend with. And I want to give back to all the other people to give them the opportunity to feel that comfort as well. My book says that, or at least that pastor said, that there's no man on earth that can bring peace to this earth. That it was all out of our hands. I don't choose to go down that road. Maybe it is all out of our hands. But maybe until doomsday shows up, maybe if enough of us choose to do the right thing, we can bring about peace on earth. Yeah, I keep saying peace never came from the end of the barrel of a gun. Peace never came from a bomb. It never came from a blade of a sword or a knife or a club. There's 10 commandments or golden rules or whatever you want to call them. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and all that, so on. good common sense rules to live by. But if we got to tear our world so far apart just to bring about peace, then what's the point? Step back and look.
Shaz?
Yeah.
How am I sounding now?
You sound
I'm
wonderful.
Rebooted.
Yeah, you're good.
Excellent. Right. Sorry about the earlier connection, but the point I was trying to raise about we need sunlight is that we physically do need sunlight. We absorb vitamin D through our skin and vitamin E through our eyes, and that is through direct sunlight. So living underground permanently is not good. Do you remember Time Machine, 1950s?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Eloi and the Morlocks.
Yeah, they looked pretty
rough. Now, the
Morlocks
lived under the ground, and they were ugly, grotesque beasts, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's basically what would happen to you. You'd lose all pigmentation in your skin. You know, you see this with in nature with cave-dwelling creatures that have never seen sunlight.
Yeah.
They become blind and they're white or transparent. Now, I've been listening in through the entire show. Loads of points are raised. And I'm going to go from memory and slowly cover some of the points. Raymond mentioned that, you know, carving out your furniture out of the solid rock in your underground cave. Now I'm thinking that would be ideal and perfect if you're blind, because you wouldn't need lighting. Nobody's going to move your furniture, so you ain't going to trip over it. So you won't actually need a white stick to know where your table, your kitchen is, and your chairs are. They'll always be there. So if you're blind, living underground, you know, could be useful. I'm not suggesting that it is beneficial, because you still need vitamin D. But vitamin E, well, that's I'm sure they would still need vitamin E, but they just won't go sunblind by staring at the sun. Also, another thing Raymond mentioned, and this is the root cause of homelessness. Raymond mentioned that there's many places in Alaska that have never been touched by mankind, and he was basically stating that there is no such thing as overcrowding in this world, and that's very, very true. There is no such thing, and this is the reason why there is homelessness, because those in control, those who dictate all the laws, are, for instance, the IMF basically steals the lands off indigenous people by basically bribing the leaders of that country, giving them a huge back loan and making them default. Once they default, the land was used as collateral, and they'll send in the UN to kick the indigenous people off the land, whether it be forced eviction or just outright slaughtering the people, forcing them into mega cities. Hence, Mexico City, you know, it's only, what, in the last 2 or 3 decades, it's risen to a population of 20 million. And that's basically because the IMF has forced all the farmers who've owned the land that they've worked for generations and generations off their land and into these mega cities. And the issue is that our land that we supposedly own, we don't actually own land rights. We own the property on it, but we're limited on what we can do on that land. You know, if you discover there's an oil field under your little plot of land, you can't drill an oil well because you have no mineral rights, right? And this is the thing, you know, if you freed up all the land in the world and gave it back to the people of the world, there would not be homelessness, because people wouldn't necessarily need to build an underground house. They would build a shack on a piece of land that they claimed as their own, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're offering loads of technical solutions questions. You know, mankind is a very innovative mind. If we
set our mind to it,
stuff just for simple needs.
Yeah,
exactly.
If we set we can accomplish anything.
Absolutely, as you pointed out, with aircraft carriers, with 6,000 people that are floating cities, you know. But that is basically an unlimited fund for a specific purpose, right?
Yeah, the war machine.
You know, it's a wrong purpose because, you know, yeah, it's a war machine. It's pretty pointless, but war is the economy now. Which is downright ridiculous. I repeat.
Okay. Well, as far as our aircraft carriers go, when that tsunami hit India and killed all those hundreds of thousands of people, the United States sent one of our aircraft carriers there. At that exact same time, there was a major military meeting of all the major powers in the world. They have this meeting every year in France. And one of the other generals, not from the United States, and I won't say what country because I don't want anybody to upset anybody, but he comes in to the meeting and says, "Isn't it just like the United States?" And so he says, "What are you talking about? They have a tsunami, kills 200,000 people, and the United States sends a warship, the aircraft carrier, to a disaster zone. Why would we do that?"
Because of the resources available.
They have three hospitals. They have 28 helicopters to ferry injured people back and forth through these hospitals. Each ship has the ability to provide 18,000 meals a day. Good meals.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. That's the two sides of the coin. You know, right
yeah,
there.
One. They also have the ability to desalinize 50,000 gallons of water a day.
Yeah, but
of course,
see, listen.
They need half a gallon of water a day, two liters of water a day to survive healthily.
That's the thing. We have the capability to put together such a deal with two sides of the coin. One could be a ultimate power, a weapon of war used for death and destruction, or other, it could be to literally uplift somebody who just went through a terrible natural or man-made disaster. That's the potential right there.
Exactly.
And that's what I've been trying to point out through this entire process.
Well, Raymond, that's it's a very valid point you made, that it's also a floating hospital, but why not just build a floating hospital with, instead of an aircraft split, helicopter decks? Because if a place has been hit by a tsunami, there is no working landing strips, because they've all been washed out, so the only things that can land are helicopters.
Sweetheart, that's exactly why you want an aircraft carrier, so that the helicopters have a place to land.
Well, look, either way,
that's what I'm saying. I'm saying a floating hospital rather than an aircraft carrier. I mean, it's dual purpose,
right? A floating hospital.
Shaz's point of view is no more war. So you don't need
that's
a specific
world.
Sorry?
You're living in a dream world when you say there's no more war.
Well, that's...
Wait a minute. I'm with both of you guys. I really am. I would love...
I understand you are.
...war nowhere and everybody with a full belly when they go to bed at night. I would love that. But it's not going to happen in our lifetime. Okay? I'm not an advocate of war. I'm just saying it exists. You got to deal with it. Okay? But those aircraft carriers have three full-fledged hospitals on board. They can produce enough drinking water for 100,000 people. They can ferry the injured back and forth. They can feed them.
That's the two sides of the coin.
18,000 people a meal a day.
Listen, guys, I'm on both y'all's side. That's two sides of the coins. I was watching I was watching a show that Mel Gibson was in yesterday, and it was about the Revolutionary War, about them fighting against the king on the other side. And if you really paid attention to what really went on back during that time, if you can believe what history says or doesn't say, the words that came out of his mouth when he was standing there over his dead son, and this one guy told him about going back to war, that it would justify his son's death by basically going out and fighting again. Well, he ends up going out fighting again. They end up winning the war, obviously, whatever. But he said that he doesn't understand how man can justify the death of another man in any form or fashion.
Right.
And we sat there all day long, and there's, patriots, as patriots in the United States, and, we've got to go get the big bad boogeyman, the terrorist, and... we're going to be rushing straight off to war. We sit there and we think about it almost in the sense of you would think about a football game. You got this team, you got that team, and you're either rooting for one team or another. Nonetheless, you will blindly follow your leaders into battle and do whatever you believe necessary in order to fight for justice and freedom and all the things that, we as the supposed free people of the world enjoy. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, old Snively Whiplash is robbing you blind. The leaders of the world are taking food that should go to these people that we hear about starving to death. There's people living behind cages like animals instead of somebody taking all the power. Imagine we got the power to amass massive armies. I mean, we can move tons and tons of machinery and medical supplies and weapons and all that kind of stuff. I understand your point, Raymond. We're not in the world today where we can lay down our arms and live free. We're in a chaotic world. But the point that I'm trying to get out to, at some time in humanity's history, before we're so forced, literally forced underground, because we have destroyed everything, every potential available above ground, before we ever get to that point, sometime, we have to reach a stage of enlightenment that understands that, we can look down the road and we can see what's coming down the road before it actually gets here. The path that we're on, you can see whether it's smooth or whether it's bad. And looking back in history, you've said it many times. If you ignore history, you're doomed to repeat it over and over again. How many times has society repeated what's gone on today? Right. Somehow, maybe we will never ever see the fruits of our own labor, the words that are coming out of our mouth, this big dream of peace and maybe it's a possibility that, like I was talking about what that pastor said, that no one man will be able to bring about peace on earth. There's 9 billion people on the planet. 9 billion people suddenly deciding to bring about peace on the planet would bring peace about on the planet.
If 8 billion of them decided to bring peace, there would be peace. Eight out of every nine. You'd only have one person trying to fight eight people. Come on.
Well, that's hardly peace then, if eight people are fighting.
Jump on one, and they're going to wind up beating them. They're going to beat them bad.
Okay, here, let me try to explain
but
it this
but
way.
You've got eight on one fighting. Then
yeah.
It only takes one to have a fight.
Listen,
that's not peace.
That's right. Listen, now let me try to explain it this way. Nikola Tesla believed that if he could bring to the world free, unlimited free energy, that there would be no more need for wars over resource. There wouldn't be no reason to be fighting over oil or coal or anything like that, because everybody would know that energy was literally free. And so we do a mad science show that is related to clean, renewable, alternative energy. And And so if you actually got that on the table to where now the value of oil was essentially worthless, there's no reason to fight over oil anymore because you can't sell it like you used to sell it. You might be able to get somebody to buy some of it, but it's not going to be...
It's in plastics out of oil. And make asphalt for roads out of oil.
Sure.
There would still be a need for oil.
Yeah, but the ultimate thing was, he wasn't the only one that believed that. Stan Myers, also in the alternative energy community, believed that if he could get his water car out there, that, you know, there wouldn't be no reason to fight over resources. If you look all the way back through the history of wars and craziness that's gone on in this world, it's been either for power, it's been for gold, it's been for shiny things, or resource. Now, I'm standing out here, I'm way back, I'm looking at the big picture, and I'm saying, well, why are you guys fighting? I mean, you got all this gold over here that you're trying to fight. You can't eat it. You can't eat the silver. I mean, it looks shiny, it looks pretty, and all that kind of stuff. But you put a value on things, on inanimate objects, to elevate those inanimate objects up to a state that everybody wants to have this gold. They want to have this silver and these diamonds and jewels and all this. And in order to get it, they got to fight over resources in order to give whoever has it whatever they want so that they can get it. You have elevated all this other things that you classify as beauty over one another, which is the true gold of this world. The true silver, the true diamonds, the true treasure of this world is the people of this world and the things, the potentials that they could actually create if they actually believed enough in humanity and themselves in order to accomplish things.
You said a mouthful now.
We could have done it.
Still can.
The solution is bust all the monopolies. Because if you look at oil, it's a small group of people who own all that. If you look at all the energy producers, it's just a small group of that. If you look at the diamond producers, it's just a small group of that. If you look at all the people who own all the gold mines of the world, it's a small group of that. If you look at all the people who own all the media, mainstream media, it's a small group of that.
Yep.
So if you break up these monopolies, right, you know, allow it open access to all, you know, if you want your own media company, you can have it. You don't have to rely, you know, you don't have to compete okay. with these monopolies who will buy you out.
See, Scablo, you have a very, very good idea, and you need a starting point. And then it domino effect. And the easiest one of those to break up is the news media. The liars, the ones that are actually lying. You don't listen to them. You don't tune into their channels. And that will bring them down. Trust me.
Well, sure. That's because
once the others see that the people are getting together to bring them down, then they'll change their ways.
Right. Here's the issue. This is the problem. If we look at the media company, is you can broadcast television without a license. And who sets all the regulations for the licensing? It's the monopolies who dictate to the government to say, this is what you need to get a license. Right? And the governments go by that because then the governments control what goes out in the media. Yeah? By here in the UK, we've got Ofsted who issue daily memos about what can be said and what can't be said. So there's total censorship in media. So to break that monopoly isn't just as easy as just setting up your own company and say, right, I'm going to go to broadcast TV, because you'll never get a license because you're not going to comply with the laws
that the
monopolies have set.
Is there any difference between a newspaper, a radio news broadcast, and a TV news broadcast? Is there any difference between that? It's news, right?
And it is news, but it's the
who said,
type of frequent...
Who said He who does not read the newspaper is uninformed. He who reads the newspaper is misinformed. Huh. It doesn't matter whether you talk about a newspaper or television.
I totally agree with you.
No,
I was just using media as an example of
a monopoly. And the only way to bring them down, okay, the only way to bring them down is tell them. If they don't tell the daggone truth, we're not going to tune into them anymore. And if we don't tune into them, then their credit ratings go down, and their backers, their people that pay them to give them money to advertise.
Yeah, I know that. They're already losing. They're already losing the info war. But there's still a monopoly.
The world needs to get together and ban. I mean, pull a boycott on any news broadcast, radio or television or newspaper, if they broadcast news that is not the truth, the absolute unadulterated truth, then you boycott them.
Well, I agree. You guys be careful not to walk over each other because you both got really good points. One of the things that I've been trying to point out to people is that the people ultimately have the power. You give them the power because if you look into just the media portion alone, there's rating systems out there, and those rating systems tell the people who run the media what it is that you like, you know, what it is that you agree with. And the same thing applies with political views, is that how many people took this poll and agree that this is the way that we need to go, or vice versa, or whatever. If you think that they don't listen to you, then you're mistaken, because they listen to you. When you go watch a TV show, they know how many people watch that TV show. They know by the response and by the products that are sold or whatever. They know how many people are interested in any specific subject. So your actions and your words really do make a difference in the power structure that's out there. Even the bankers out there, they don't control you like you think they do. You have money, and the money is controlled by them. But how you spend that money, that's the key. If you look into a business and you find out that this business is using child labor or slave labor, you don't have to buy from that company anymore. You can take that controlled money and put it somewhere else. You can put it towards something that you do believe in. So here's the whole thing. Throughout all, no matter what we say, and I don't even care if you go into the depths of any kind of religion or any kind of politics or any kind of belief system or whatsoever, if you think that you haven't got no power, then you literally haven't got no power. If you think that the world is doomed and there ain't nothing that can be done, when that pastor said that there is no man on this planet who could ever bring about peace on earth, then there is no man on this earth, as long as that's what you believe, that it's not possible. See, I don't know when the last day of this world is ever going to be, alright? I don't know when doomsday is going to show up, but what I do know, that if I lay down the evil, then the evil thrives. If I feed the beast, then the beast keeps getting fatter. And so if I look out into this world, I see a need, I address that need, I'm going to make the world as best as I possibly can for as long as I possibly can. And if somehow or another my words can resonate to all the people of this earth, using their free will, my free will, all our gifts, all our talents, and every bit of resource available on this planet, we're talking about the impossible dream, people. We're talking about bringing about something on this earth that was said that could not be done. Now,
you know, the Knights of the Round Table, we're not supposed to sit here and preach and preach and preach about doomsday and this, that, and other, and you're not. I mean, you're telling people that don't worry about it, and you're right. But the thing is, the main reason that I understood that this program was even started was to come up with solutions. And I think Sky Blue Eyes, he just came up with the perfect solution. And the thing is, the only way evil can succeed is if good people stand by and do nothing.
That's the point I'm trying to say.
You start somewhere. And the news media is the easiest and best place to start, right there. If they don't tell the truth, you don't tune them in anymore.
That's
you
the point.
You bring them down, back to their
yeah.
Look, you got more power. Once
we've broken the media down.
You're right, Raymond. The media.
Here's the thing.
Mainstream media is falling. They have lost their power. And the proof of that one is the fact Donald Trump got elected over Hillary Clinton, where mainstream media was saying, oh, Hillary's going to win, 99% sure, guaranteed, but she didn't. So they've lost all their power. But the actual major point that I was making...
Hold on, let him finish his point, Raymond.
The major point I was making is we've got to bust the monopolies, and the biggest one is the oil companies, and the reason why I say they are the biggest one is because they suppress all the new technologies. You mentioned the guy who was bringing cars powered by water. He was killed, basically.
Of course, there's
been
a lot of people like that.
His invention worked.
Okay, but here's the thing. You're
please.
Right.
So you've got. Hang on. You've got to bust the monopolies. It doesn't matter whatever industry you look at. There's a monopoly. For instance, there's a monopoly in building aircraft carriers. There's a monopoly in building warplanes. There's a monopoly in all kinds of military industrial complex, intelligence services. There's a monopoly. I'm not saying that you should open it up to the general public, because then there would be no secrets. But what I'm getting at...
I want to ask you a question.
Yes, sure.
I was born and raised in a neighborhood where each and every block of my neighborhood had its own gang. And in each gang had their own hierarchy of bullies. Now, if you wanted to take over a gang, you didn't step in and fight the biggest kid on the block. You started taking out his underlings. And that's exactly my point about taking out the news media. Okay, we've heard them. But I'm saying take them to their knees and then let the big boys know what we're doing. We're going to pick them off one at a time, the weakest one first.
Well, that's a tactic, but...
I'm trying to come up with a plan.
I do understand what you're saying, and I know your question is basically how do we do it, and you gave an answer which is basically take out the underlings. Wherever you look, there's a monopoly. I mean, take a look at the soft drinks. You've got a monopoly there, Coca-Cola and Pepsi, right? They set the prices, and you'll have small companies trying to undercut the prices, but the quality just downgrades. But digress. The issue is, do you start at the corporations level when you're trying to bust a monopoly? For instance, you need gasoline for your truck or car, yeah? So do you stop using one company and go to another company? Because you still got to buy it for your car. If you want to run a car, you need gasoline. But it's a consortium that own the monopoly of oil companies. How do you do it? You still need gasoline, but you can't knock out one without the others supporting them. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
I understand exactly what you're saying. You're going to get two bullies on a block, and neither one of them knows if they can beat the other one up or not. They're going to pull together. And your big oil corporations do the same thing. They will pull together if they have to.
Exactly. We've got British Petroleum here, owned by the Queen, and you've got Royal Dutch Shell, which is owned by her cousin, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, right? So, kissing cousins, the biggest major oil companies in the world, British Petroleum and Royal Dutch Shell. So, how do you knock one of them out without the other supporting the other one,
Yeah.
It's a tough problem, but that's what needs to be done. The monopolies
That's why
my warfare
comes out to take out the underlings first. He gives the big boys knowledge that we can do it. And if they don't straighten up, we will come after them. So you just keep taking out the underlings until they get smart.
All right, so we've been joined by Barry. And I know he's probably got a lot to say, but before we get there, I want to point out something. There was one lady on this planet who saw a problem, and she addressed it. She didn't argue with anybody of what the best way to address this problem was. She didn't say that this is the way to fix the world. What she did was she literally become proactive, and she did something. That was it. She just saw the problem. She addressed the problem. She fixed the problem. A year later, she's standing next to a beautiful baby boy that has a hope in this world. Now, we can sit around and contemplate on all the different methods by which we can actually take down governments and corporations and all that. Or we can live our lives like that lady did, and as soon as we see a problem, we address that problem. And when the majority of the people begin to address the problems, things like gas prices, they'll start going down. Because you're not going to buy from them anymore. Things like people who are being elected to office that shouldn't be in office because of their criminal past or whatever, you're not going to elect them into office no more.
All right, as far as feeding the world and helping the world with medicine and homes and food and health care, that's not the problem. The problem is, every time the good people of this earth try to help, the governments, the big bullies on the block, they take and steal all the stuff.
Well, you know what the difference is? If I'm in a neighborhood and I got some food that needs to go to the homeless, and I know that I'm going to be met with any kind of resistance, I'm going to go find the biggest, baddest boys on the block, and I'm going to say, look, there's a starving baby over there. Let's walk this food in. Period.
Let's go.
There ain't no giving it to the government. There ain't no second middleman. There's us. We literally, when we talked about how Dublin mentioned guerrilla charity, where if they're going to arrest you for feeding somebody, you run by hand the person a sandwich and run off. Even if you have to do it dressed like Batman, who cares?
Exactly.
If you know that there's something that needs to be done and you're in fear that if you do this you're going to meet retribution from your government, then you don't have a government. You have a tyrannical system that is meant to keep people down. Anytime there's something that needs to be done, there's a difference between right and wrong, and deep down inside, each and every one of you knows that difference.
You know, here's the thing. I know Sky Blue is going to cut me down big time for saying this. But if every time we sent a ship loaded with food, clothes, and medicine to help poor people, if we sent two battleships along with it so it didn't get commandeered, and one aircraft carrier so we could fly the daggone food and clothes into these refugee camps, and the jet support the helicopters so that the crooked, stealing governments wouldn't try to shoot the helicopters down. I mean, look, if you're going to fight, fight right.
But there are some things there are some things worth fighting for, Raymond. But it's
I am for trying to help people that need help. But when somebody tries to stop me, I'm gonna get a baseball bat.
Well, there are some things in this world worth fighting for. And fighting for what's right, I'm not so delusional that I believe that this is going to be an easy path to fix this world. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that if we're ever to start to pave the stones into the future for humanity, we got to recognize our own individual true power, which is the solution to the problem. Yes. Everybody keeps talking about all the solutions, and I've been saying this since the Knights of the Round Table started. You are the solution, and you have always been the solution. You have resources out there available that if you grab up like-minded individuals, you can get things accomplished. there isn't no reason why we can't do things other than, you know, out of fear of trying to do something against a system that is trying to keep people oppressed for power or whatever agenda that they got. When you got individuals out there, even one personal individual that puts a deal up there like the Georgia Guidestone says you need to take the population down to this is the perfect number. Who are they to say what the perfect number is on the planet? And since we're all here right now, who are they to say who goes and who doesn't go? Who is the scum of the earth that shouldn't be fed or whatever? You start looking in that type of deal, you might as well just go stand on their side because you're acting just like them. There's a difference between doing what's right and then becoming that which you despise.
You know, these people that say we ought to cut down the population of the earth and this, that, and the other, why don't they lead by example?
Well, they don't. That's the point. That should be the first.
That's all anybody's got to do. Once they start talking that bull crap, you just tell them, hey, I got a 38 pistol here. You want to lead by example?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That if you watch them lead by example, then you know maybe then they might be justified. But leading by the example isn't as common. It's not even like common sense isn't as common as you would need to be. You know, if you see that there's something that needs to be done and you just do it, then it's easier for somebody else to see something that needs to be done and just do it. But when things get to the point, it's like this. If your house gets so doggone messy, and every time you go to look at that mess, it is so overwhelming that you can't even find it in your heart to get the energy to do it because it's just so overwhelming, then it'll never get done.
Exactly.
But if you roll up your sleeves and you start digging in and you find the problems of this world and you begin to fix them in the best way that you can, maybe you won't succeed. But there's good possibility that if you try hard enough, you will succeed. And if you do succeed, then you just made the world a better place. That whole one positive pebble at a time doesn't sound like a lot until you step back and you look at the big picture. You know, if there's a one brick missing in the wall and you replace that wall, then you got a wall. If there is two bricks missing in that wall and you replace those two bricks, then you got a wall. Otherwise, you just got a mess. You see what I'm saying here?
If you've got 10 bricks missing in that wall, you've got a window.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it. Being positive thinking. I love positive thinking.
Maybe we should build doors in the walls. That way people can get through. But come on, man. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is trying to bring more knights to the table. Not to tell the world how terrible the world is, but to tell the world that if you think it's terrible and you think that there's nothing you can do about it, then it will remain terrible until you realize that you have the power to fix it.
What is that old saying, that prayer? Lord, give me the strength to fix problems that I can, the serenity to accept those things that I cannot change, and the wisdom to know the difference.
There you go, man. That's the point. See, words of wisdom coming out of something there. But look, we have every single resource necessary. We have all the technology necessary. Now all we need to do is muster up the team to do so.
Right.
It's as simple as that. You know, there's communities out there that I mention all the time, like the Amish communities. They don't buy homeowners insurance. What they got that is so much better than insurance is a community that if something terrible happens to somebody's family's house, they'll bring 1,000 men over there and they will put that house back up. They'll bring the nails, the hammers, the supplies, the people, the food, and everything, and they'll put that house back up. Farmers did it. Barn raising ceremonies. They weren't the only people. There's lots of communities out there. Communities that didn't throw their elders to the old folks home. That they kept their elders there and they took care of them as if their elders took care of them when they were little. That's the kind of mentality people need to recognize. That's the kind of power that people need to recognize. The power that comes about every single time there's a tragedy and the average Joe becomes the superhero. The average Joe is the one that rushes into the flaming building before the firefighters get there and drag somebody to safety. The average Joe is the one that reaches in their own cupboard and brings out food and passes it on to those in need. The average Joe is the one who ain't judging the man who needs food.
You know, I'll tell you what, we talked about the nights around table where we tried to come up with solutions. I have the perfect solution for all the piracy that goes on in the world. The piracy where they're attacking cargo ships and holding the crew and the cargo ransom for millions and millions of dollars. They're attacking cruise ships where people are on vacation and they're hurting people and they want $20-30 million and they hold these people ransom. The reason they can do this and they are given permission, the reason they can do this is because of maritime law, a cargo ship or a non-military ship cannot carry weapons. So all these cruise ship line owners, what they really should do is go into the South Pacific, buy a large island, buy some military ships, form their own government, and therefore they have military ships that can be armed and have them escort the cargo ships and the cruise liners. That solution solved. I mean, problem solved, man. That's it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the world that we live in right now, everybody's saying, yep, you got to take away the guns. Yep, you got to put down the sword. Yeah, you got to put...
There's one exception to that rule.
What is it? Huh. We lost your audio again.
Yeah, the one exception to that is if it's got an Israeli flag on it. So if it's registered in Israel, you can arm all the crew members.
Well, look, we can arm up everybody on the planet. We can give everybody a gun. Let me equalize it. But the problem is,
that bringing it to war.
It's dominoes, man. It's dominoes. Once the first domino tips, somebody shoots somebody, and even if they were justified, somebody else, oh, you just shot my cousin. Next thing you know, we're all back to square one again. What it's going to take is for people to understand.
I know what you're saying, Shaz. That is exactly what would happen. But inside the 6 months of chaos, all the idiots would have shot themselves.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Clean the house and then let the stupid people shoot each other. All right, well.
Exactly. Give everyone a gun.
See, everybody's got a gun. Everybody's got their finger on the doomsday button. And everybody has the choice, the free will to blow it all up if necessary. Look, this is why I say, and I've said this multiple times. This is why I say this, and I say this multiple times. The task before us is so overwhelming. And the words that came out of that pastor's mouth that said that no man will ever be able to bring about peace on this world, it looks like that's a possibility that it is totally overwhelming, that there is no way, no heck, no, not even remotely possible that we could ever fix anything on this planet. And so, might as well throw our hands up and go in the opposite direction and just say the heck with it. But I'm sitting here saying that I believe in the impossible. I believe in the ultimate dream that we can, if we choose to do so, as human beings, as the human race, if we choose to do so, because we were given free will and we were given this vast expanse of all these resources and all the capabilities and access to the knowledge that we got, if we choose to do so, however unlikely it seems, and even in my book of faith, where it talks about in the last days that this is going to come about, even as dire as that sounds, until it is over, until it is completely and utterly over, and there is no potential for your words to even be heard or any possibility of anything positive happening in this world, that we have an option available to us, and that is that we get our act together as human beings and do what is necessary to resolve the issues of the world. One lady chose to do exactly that, and she succeeded. So now there's a life in this world that was uplifted from the depths of hell to an existence that is tolerable in a world that is chaotic as all get out. Wars, rumors of wars, plagues, famine, pestilence, and all this kind of stuff. Doomsday scenarios galore. There are so many ways to die and so many ways to destroy ourselves that it is mind-blowing. The opposite side of that coin is the options available to us with the resources available to us and the knowledge available to us, that if we could actually use that one word in the whole entire grand scheme of thing called wisdom and lead by example, and do what that lady did for that one life on this planet, instead of all those multiples of people that walked by looking in disgust at this little child that was so skinny and malnutritioned and just looking like not even human. We could take an example from that one lady. That one lady was the savior on that day. And that's what I've been trying to say, and that's what I believe my good book was trying to say when it said that these things would come to pass, lest these days be shortened. And so, until it's over, I'm going to continue to believe in that impossible dream that we can fix this world. Until it's over, until the last body falls, I'm going to keep on preaching I want peace, because I do. And maybe it ain't going to happen. Maybe I'm just a delusional fool with messed up hair and crazy beliefs that we could bring about a heaven on earth on this earth and everybody be able to benefit, and he who needs food has food, he who wants a home has a home. We don't have to go to war, we choose to go to war. We don't have to support evil, we choose to support evil. We don't have to turn a blind eye to the homeless or the sick or the hungry. We choose. We were given free will. We make these choices of our own free will. You can't tell me that we have access to all of what we got. All the land and all the animals and resources and water and fuel and energy. That we can't do something right in this world. We can amass an army, but we can't amass a group of missionaries to go walk some food up to the person that is hungry. I may be living in denial. I may be seeing that the world is coming to an end, and I'm just not willing to admit that it's that bad. But my book said that if I had the faith of a mustard seed, I could move a mountain. And so I'm taking that to task. I'm testing the theory. I'm testing the words that said if I had that much faith that I could move a mountain. I'm testing it. And so whenever I do finally get to stand in front of my almighty God that I believe in, I'm going to be able to say, I had faith of a mustard seed. I did move a mountain. You see what I'm talking about, Sky Blue? Did I lose you?
I certainly do.
No, I was with you all the way there.
That lady moved a mountain. She moved a mountain in a most profound way.
Oh, for sure.
So, if people wanna believe in things being so terrible, well, then that's what we're gonna see, things so terrible. But if people wanna believe in possibilities, the Knights of the Round Table, they came to the right place. Because that's what it's all about, is what is possible in this world. What do you think?
On that note, I'm just about to say, my favorite saying here is basically, hell is in your mind and heaven is in your heart. If you live in your mind, you live in hell. If you live through your heart, you will live in heaven. And, excuse me. Right. The world, where is the world? The world is what's around you. It's much bigger than what's around you, but you can only make an impact on the world around you. I mean, admittedly, your voice is carrying worldwide right now, Chaz, but, you know, only those listening to you, you're having an impact on.
That's right.
You cannot change the entire world. It's just not possible for one person. But you can make a change to your world that is around you. Even just moving your coffee cup from the table to the wash basin for it to get washed will change the world, because your cup will become clean when you wash it. But what I'm saying is, do not concern yourself with what is so far away that it's impossible for you to change, because, you know, a disaster happens. Well, there's nothing really you can do about it except grieve for the victims, you know. But at the end of the day, you can't cry for everybody. You've got your own life, right? So, what is better, laugh or cry? You can't cry about everything that's going wrong in the world. You can laugh about it and say, oh, that's just wrong, just stupid. You know, turn it into a joke, make your day better, rather than being miserable about what's going on in the world. We can talk doom and gloom all day long, forever and ever, but you're not having a fulfilling life if that's what you're going to do. You know, well, have fun in life.
The path
you was born here one time only. This is it. You have to experience it. You've got to be the best you can be. Have as much fun out of this experience, because this is it. There is no second chance.
The path that I'm on right now, I do the best I can to enjoy my life. I do the best I can to be the best I can, and I lead by example, and I try to make my little circle down here as comfortable as possible for not just myself but others, in hopes that they'll follow that same path and pass those on to their children and so on down the line. And that's what the good people of the world do, you know. And I'm not saying to everybody out there that you got to go out there personally and conquer the world and solve all the issues of the world by yourself. That's not the way it works. It's the pieces of the puzzle coming together to realize when you see a problem. You don't turn a blind eye to evil. You don't turn a blind eye to the homeless or the sick. You do what you can. And maybe sometimes you might get taken advantage of. But if your heart is true and your mission in life and your goal to make the world better than what it was whenever you got here, then you do what you can when you can. And you show other people that it's possible to literally make a difference. Now, of course, that sounds like preaching, and it sounds like standing on a soapbox. But also, you know, if you step back and you look at the big picture, and if you look through your heart like Sky Blue just mentioned, you'll see the world in a different place. You'll see that dream. And once you see that there is a potential, even however far away or small it is, you know, people talk about the promised land. We're going to go search for the promised land, you know, this place where everybody's happy and everybody's fed and all that kind of stuff. And they go through a long journey, and some of them may never even step foot into the promised land. But those who are striving forward to at least try to make that dream come true are the ones that are laying down the stones for future generations to finish that journey out and finally be able to enjoy that. It's not just about us as individuals. It's about humanity as a whole. It's about the future of where we're going to be. We're either going to bring ourselves down to the lowest depths of hell and destroy everything that we could have made into such a wonderful thing, or we're going to take and realize what we have access to. We're standing at a crossroads right now where we have the vast sum of all man's knowledge, like my friend Steve always says, and we have access to all these resources, and we got a few knuckleheads on the planet that are making it a mess for everybody. And sometimes you choose the lesser of two evils to put up there as your representatives, because the other guy's worse than this guy. I'm going to let this guy get in there. You should not let either one of them guys or gals inside there. You should find the person that is fit for the job and willing to do so and choose that one. The system has beat the average brain down to the extent that you're in fear of everything. You're in fear of stepping outside the realm of your comfort zone and making something happen. In your own communities, there's people that are looked up to. Everyone should be looked up to. The lowest man on the totem pole should be looked up to. Because from where I come from, it said all men are created equal. That means the pastor ain't no better than the person sitting in the pews. The government ain't no better than the person walking down the road. See, the whole concept of government to begin with was we choose some people to enforce laws that we put on the books that we don't want people killing each other. So if you kill somebody, we'll stick the government on you. It's not the way it's going to get resolved, because governments always get out of control. You give somebody an inch and they take a mile, so on and so forth. You've heard all the words. It's got to come a time when humanity finally realizes, but it just, to me and to so many others out there, the task is so overwhelming that it seems like it's impossible and there's no way to fix it all. I'm not willing to lay down and say that we can't. I'm saying that if we believe so, we can. We were given the power to do so. When the average Joe finally realizes who and what they are and their potential, that's when this world will change. And until then, you're going to have crazy voices like mine shouting it out on radio shows. Words like, "Can't we all just get along?" That sounds crazy, don't it, Sky Blue?
Not to me, it doesn't. I mean, it's perfectly valid. You know, we should all get along. You know, the thing is, we can all make a difference in our local area. You know, I go out every day, and if I see someone miserable, I'll just smile at them. If I've got the time, I'll actually talk to them and find out what the problem is. You know, just the mere act of a conversation with someone cheers them up. You know, they may be feeling miserable, but because you've noticed them and spoken to them, it's different to their day, you know, and making a difference is what it's about.
Yep.
You know? So, just the mere act of a conversation, finding time to speak to someone.
Even that, some people want to get credit for what they do, and some people don't take enough credit for what they do. You know, when you do things like that, even in as small as it seems, that's one of those positive pebbles that we keep talking about. And if everybody in this planet is throwing positive pebbles in the pond, Muddy said one time, "Oh, that's how that island got there in my pond," you know, because we all threw pebbles in the pond. you know, either way, now he's got an island. If you do something, then at least something gets done. If you do absolutely nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done. It's as simple as that. And, man, this hurts my head to even sit here and have to even contemplate on, you know, who am I to say what we should do in this world? I'm just one person. I'm just one piece of the puzzle. I ain't nobody special. I sure ain't no savior. I'm not God. If I was, then I'd snap my fingers and I'd make it all right. But then again, if I did snap my fingers and all right, it's the equivalence of me giving my son a brand new Ferrari before he learned responsibility. Now maybe it's the case that we need to learn responsibility. We need to travel down the rough roads in order to become what we could potentially be before we're handed over that kind of power. You can't be God just because you want to be God and then be able to just do whatever and destroy and run amok. Because with that kind of power would come a lot of responsibility. If you had a heart, if you cared about anything, if you're in the actions. If it's all just a free-for-all and every man for himself, then what's the point? Run amok, hurt each other, kill each other, have fun, do all that. Hey, there ain't no tomorrow. There ain't no retribution on the other side. You see what I'm saying? The possibilities... Yep. The possibilities of what we could accomplish as opposed to what we have accomplished. I feel like we as humanity have squandered an amazing, amazing time of, you know, understanding and being able to experience things. You steal somebody's life, they didn't get to experience their life. You stole it from them. There ain't no way they can get it back. You didn't have no right to take it. It wasn't yours. And when you steal somebody's life, that may have very well been the next person that was going to do something really profound for this world to make it so much better. We can run around killing everybody, but we can't justify killing everybody. You can't justify killing one person. And if your brothers and sisters are dying, and there ain't nobody there to save them, that means somebody dropped the ball. I mean, somebody wasn't doing their job. Maybe we're here to learn. Maybe before we finally meet our maker or finally learn about what it all is, maybe we're here to learn something. You know, there's not one person on this planet.
It's more than just learning. It's more than just learning. We're here to experience.
Yeah.
We're on a physical world, and the only thing we can do is to experience. Whether it be a good experience or a bad experience, we're here to experience. You know, you will learn from every experience you have, but it is the fact that you have experienced something.
But do you?
If you do not experience anything, you have no soul.
But do you think that people want to experience hell on earth at the hand of another?
Nope.
Well, that's the point.
But as I say, it's a case of that is how it is. You know, you cannot change your experiences. They occur, but you will experience from them. You will learn from them. But it isn't a case of learning every day. You have to experience every day. You will experience.
Yeah.
Whether it be a good experience or a bad experience. Hopefully you will learn something from it.
Barbara,
in terms of you don't repeat the same mistakes.
Barbara Three Crow in the chat room over at TCT Radio said, now is the time to learn to get right with each other. And that's the thing. I feel like there's a mass awakening, because if you think about throughout history, and you think about all the peacemakers of the world, you know, my good book said, blessed be the peacemakers, for they shall inherit the earth, or whatever, you know. And there's something to be said about that. You know, if throughout history, there were wise people that, when they saw that things were getting so bad, decided, no, you know, we got to come together. We got to figure out some way to fix this before it's all broken. And their message wasn't heard. It wasn't listened to. It wasn't taken to heart. And society after society throughout the history of time had destroyed itself. When's the last time? If this was a grand experiment by some divine creature or alien whatever, when is the last time? When is the last generation, when is the last chance to get anything right? Well, for us, this is the last time. In this time...
It's our one and only time.
Yeah, it's our one and only chance to do anything right. You know, we can either squander that chance.
I was just going to say that what's going on in the world is more a spiritual war in terms of, do you live in fear in your mind and end up being dictated to all your life? Because whilst you're in a fear mode, you cannot think clearly, you make bad decisions, you do everything wrong, and you end up going the wrong path. Or do you go the opposite direction and live through your heart and you feel for what is right? If that's not right, you don't do it. If it's not right to your heart, you don't do it. And, you know, live life through love. Love life and you will live it a lot longer.
Yeah.
If you live in fear, you'll die pretty quickly through making bad decisions.
Well, there's a little video.
It's
that,
a spiritual war, mate.
Yeah, there's a little video that we posted out there many times. It's about some dots, a little tiny amount of dots is ruling over everybody and making them live in fear and basically lying and manipulating them. And essentially the battle between good and evil has been going on since it all started. It is a spiritual war. And in order to try to imagine this, you got a battlefield, right? And there are people dropping like flies on the battlefield. Both sides are killing each other. And then you got those who are running out there in the middle of the battlefield to drag people to safety, you know, and patch them up. I want to save your life. You know, you got those folks out there trying to say, I feel like sometimes we are those people that are out there in the battlefield for the mind. And we're trying to tell them, look, get up, you can make it through this. Go back the other direction, the safety's that way, or whatever, you know. And we're up against insurmountable odds. I mean, it's as if there is no way.
Dig your foxhole deeper.
Yeah. So, the average person would think, you know, when you heard everything that was being said, it's time to give up. I mean, come on, the army, they outnumber us 1,000 to 1. I mean, they got guns and all we got's fly swatters. What are we gonna do? You see what I mean? And so that's what if the notorious they out there, you know, they are the ones that are controlling this and they are doing this. Who are they? And why do you support they? You know, they want you to believe that you are helpless. They want you to believe that you have no power and that there is no way that you can fix this world. You know, every time I bring up feeding the homeless, somebody else brings up how every time people try to feed the homeless, that doggone pirates come out there and steal the food, or governments steal the food. And nobody ever says, well, if they're going to steal the food, and we know they're going to steal the food, why don't we send a whole bunch of food that way so they see that food coming, and the smart ones of us, we'll rush in through the back and give the people the food so everybody's got food, including the crooks. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I'm just going to throw in a funny here. Government, is acting as though mankind is a zoo. I don't know if you've ever been to a zoo, but everywhere on in zoos, it's got signs saying, do not feed the animals. And that's basically how they're treating the homeless. Oh, do not feed the animals. Do not feed the homeless. Because you'll encourage more here, you know. Do not feed the bears at the dump, because it'll bring more bears to the dump. But that's the way government looks at it. And it's totally stupid. I mean, if government wanted to solve that problem, why not house the homeless? Feed the homeless. Yep. Rather than sort of block.
Sky Blue, that is why...
From feeding...
That is why I keep... Yeah, go. That is why I keep on saying that I don't care if this homeless person is scamming me. I don't care if this homeless person is intending on buying liquor or drugs or whatever. All I know is that somebody has put out there that they have a need for something. And whatever they choose to do with the gift that I give them, if I have money in my pocket to hand them to go buy them some food or drugs or scam me into helping them pay for their insurance for their Maserati or whatever, it's not for me to judge their intent. It's for me to see that if something is perceived to be bad, that I'm going to do whatever I can to try to make it good. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a rich person. I speak to homeless in the city centre here. I think they're quite entertaining, actually. They got some strange outlooks on life, and it's quite amusing. Not that I laugh at them. I laugh with them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You pick up some real good tips on what's going on in the city too, because they actually they know more about what's going on.
Well, when those folks have actually lived down there, and then you actually walk in the shoes of the homeless or the poor, and you see how they live their life and the ways that they have to survive, then it gives you a little bit more respect for the things that you're blessed with yourself. I've seen all sides of society. I've seen the super wealthy all the way down to the super poor. I've seen it all. I've seen some things that no man or woman should ever have to lay eyes on. And I see that the world has a need. And so the best I can do with what I got is to use whatever access I have to these people, to the hearts of the people out there involved, which is the other brothers and sisters on the planet. Look, if there was a way that I could get around and feed every single person on this planet by myself, you know, they say it's too overwhelming. One person can't do that. But if the words that I'm saying resonate to somebody who is in the general vicinity, that's why I say what I say. You know, we have technology today, drone technology. If there was a million drones out there and there was a million... you know, people in need, or even half a million people in need, and another half of the million was wanting to steal all the food, and we had enough people that could fly drones in and lower a sack lunch down to each person that really needs it, and even including the ones over there trying to steal it, send them food too. You see what I'm saying? The potential to do what is necessary is there. And you didn't ever have to raise the barrel of a gun to threaten somebody. Man, I understand that we gotta have, right now in the world we live in, we gotta have ways to defend ourselves. There's people out there that don't believe we need to defend ourselves. It's all up to the government to protect us. They've done a real good job, haven't they? I mean, seriously. They're still dropping bombs everywhere. They're still oppressing the homeless. They're still oppressing the poor. There's still commercials on TV that shows a starving baby in the world. There's still commercials on TV showing people abusing animals in the world. Mankind has a potential to be so wicked, it's insane. But mankind also has the same, on the opposite side of the coin, the potential to be so incredibly loving that it's mind-blowing. You got to choose your side of the battle, folks.
I totally agree. The problem with humankind is that we are childish. We haven't matured. We're not even, you know, spiritually, we're at a 5-year-old stage. We're just experiencing it. Some of us are wizened enough to say, hey, that's wrong. But others of us are still like playing with the matches, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to set fire to everything.
Those who've lost...
Until all of mankind, humankind, grows up. And until we grow up, then we will realize that, you know, evil is wrong.
Yeah.
Until then, we're still playing as children.
Those of us who have been fortunate enough to stumble upon wisdom and believe in the dream, we preach. All right, however you want to say it. Guys, standing on a soapbox. Oh, you can't fix this because it's too much of a mess. We've seen the wisdom. We've seen the hope. We've seen the light. And we try to share that with people around the world in hopes that it resonates with them and makes the world a better place. If you think the world is so bad and it's so miserable, then use your power, your personal power, to fix it in as much capacity as you can. In the smallest capacity to the largest capacity. Do something profound for your neighbor. Do something profound for your family. Do something profound for yourself. Do something. It's that simple. And, you know, one person ain't got all the answers. One person couldn't bring about peace on Earth. But 9 billion people on this planet could. And it's as simple as that. We're waiting around for the Messiah. We're waiting around for a Savior. We're waiting around for somebody to come here and fix it by some divine power. When I do believe that there is a God, and I do believe that there is a Savior. That comes from my book of faith. But I am not waiting around for God or a Savior in order to do what I know is right. And what I know is right is that until the last ray of sunlight hits this planet, until the last body falls, until there is absolutely no light at the end of the tunnel, absolutely no hope, and the game is over, then I got to do what I can do to share words of wisdom and common sense in hopes that somehow or another, that rest of the people, the other pieces of the puzzle come together and they figure it out that we could literally, if we wanted to, we could fix it all. We have the power.
Oh, we sure do. I just like to point out that there is no need to wait for the Messiah's return. Because, you know, we're all born in God's image. We're all born in God's image. Thus, we are all mini gods. Why wait for a big God when we ourselves are a little god? And thus, no need to wait for somebody to come and help us. Just get off your backsides and do it. Make that change that you can in the world. You're there. You're the hero or heroine, as the case may be. Just do it. Well, whatever it takes, whatever needs to be done, do it.
There's some.
You know, if everyone decided no more evil in the world, if everyone chose that path, then there would be no more evil.
There's comments in the chat room over there at TCT Radio. Says Barbara Trico said, just wondering, what is the solution? First off, the solution is we the people. And then the next comment is, how do we help those who are refugees and not rapists, etc., and keep out the extremists? That's the trick. You know, many good people will... who one by themselves couldn't stop a bully. We'll stand in front of an individual who's in danger and basically become a human shield, sacrificing their potential safety and potentially even their life just to ensure that the right is justice is served. This one is protected. You see what I'm saying? There may be many of us fall on the battlefield just trying to stand up for what is right. What other alternative do we got? You know? Stand by and let the bullies of the world and the beasts of the world eat everybody alive and, you know, oh, that's terrible. I'm sad for that person, you know, but, you know, I'm too afraid. I can't stand in front of that bully. I just ain't brave enough. But if you're standing there with 9 billion of your brothers and sisters, it makes a big difference on how brave you are, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. It's just, there ain't no easy answer to any of what we've got going on out here. The only answer to any of what we've got going on here is that the people of the world have to begin to believe in the dream before the dream can ever be implemented. If you're told that it's not possible, and you believe that it's not possible, then it's not possible. It's as simple as that. I would be willing to stand in front of danger to protect anybody out there because I believe that that life belongs to them. They have the right to live in this world. They have the right to live, you know, a decent, happy life. They have the right to choose whether or not their life is going to be miserable or not. It just
you hit on something there, Shaz. You know. Whatever you believe it to be, that is how it is, right? It doesn't matter what argument, you know, you put to someone. If they believe the opposite, then there's no way you're going to convince them because they believe it to be so.
Yeah.
Right? And if you already have doubts in yourself, then you'll never achieve anything.
And so, right. How do
so
we...
the only belief you need... Yeah, hang on. The only belief you really need is in yourself. If you've got that one belief, then nothing is really truly impossible.
And so the question...
Nothing is truly impossible because you can make it happen.
Yeah.
Or you and a few other like-minded people can make it happen. Or you and the world can make it happen. If you believed... that is what should happen, right? This is why they, using that word that you've been, the controllers, have been using so often. So that is why they have been instilling in humankind's psychology that peace on Earth is not possible. That's why they've been doing it. Because then people doubt that it would be possible.
Yeah,
if you doubt it, then it won't happen.
And here's how you make it to the point where the people can actually believe that it's possible. The example that I gave earlier where that lady found that child and nursed that child back to health, she showed that it was possible. She proved that it was possible. She did it. She went through the extremes and she made it possible. She literally brought about a miracle on Earth. And if we want the rest of the world, if you, each and every individual, want the rest of the world to believe that the ultimate dream of a heaven on Earth or a utopia is possible, then you do exactly what that lady did. You find it in your heart and you muster up the courage and the resources and do what it takes to make that miracle come true. And that way that people around you will see that it's possible. Seeing is believing. If you see a man walk on water, then you understand that in some form or fashion, walking on water is possible. There was a man who believed he could fly and he finally made it happen. He flew.
I can actually walk on water, Shaz.
Well,
I'm not kidding you. I can walk on water. Literally. I just wait for winter, wait for the ponds to freeze over, and I go ice skating.
Well, there you
and
go.
I take my shoes off and I walk all over the water. Yeah, see? Everything is possible.
That's it. That's the whole point. You may have had to wait till the doggone water was frozen, but you did it. You walked on water. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, for sure.
If you say something can be done,
exactly,
you show somebody that it can be done. And you will make believers out of it. If you believe in your faith so strongly, you show people what your faith has done for you, and you will bring them to your faith. You prove it. You get out there and you make the miracles happen. Look, in my book of faith, it says that all men were created in the image of God, which makes us creators. We create our own pain, we create our own suffering, we create our own destiny. We allow the world to be as the world is because we choose to do so. We had been given the choice. We could be the most rotten people on the planet, or we can be the most loving people on the planet. We can live in a war zone, or we can make the war zone go away. It's as simple as that. Just by the actions of the many, you'll see a difference in the few. Because it's been proven. Alternative energy has already spun the wheels out from underneath the mainstream media. The mainstream media is struggling to stay afloat because they know that the people have spoken. And when the people decide to speak, that's when real change happens. When people just walk by a baby in that kind of shape as if it doesn't affect me, it's not my child, it's not my responsibility, I didn't put that child there. And then they look over and they see one lady who decided, this is my child. I didn't give birth to this child, but this is my child. This is my brother, my sister. And I ain't going to stand idly by and allow this to occur. When people finally see enough people doing what that lady did, they will believe it's possible. And that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing in a nutshell. If you believe the world is too far gone, then you're not going to do anything to make it better. It's as simple as that. If you believe that there's hope in this world, as long as you put your hand in there and try to help, then you're going to try to help. There's missionary after missionary after missionary been in nation after nation in all the poor communities of the world, all over the place. There's good people on this planet who have done and went above and beyond the call of duty and even risked their life and even sacrificed their life to help others out in this world. Those are the people that give me the hope because they have been there. They've been through the extremes. They fought against insurmountable odds and they made something happen. Somebody that they helped is out helping somebody else right now. That child, I'd love to see what that child ends up in life, because that child went from next to knocking on death's door to a beautiful child. And you can't look at that picture and see that child sitting there in his little red jumpsuit and his backpack on and healthy and just knowing that he's loved, and think that that's not a miracle. And that miracle was done by one lady who went out through the positive pebbles and got many other people, doctors and people with finance involved, to pay this child's doctor bills to get him healthy again. And so that one lady brought about a miracle. That one lady took her faith in what was right and what was wrong, and she moved a mountain. And that's what we're trying to do here on the Knights of the Round Table, is to take our mustard seed, our faith of a mustard seed, and move mountains. That's what this is all about, folks. You want the world to be a better place, then the trick is you've got to get out there and make it a better place. If you need answers in alternative energy, hey, come join us on the Mad Science Show. We got all kinds of ideas. We got all kinds of research. There's information galore out there. If you can't find it and we don't know it, we'll help you research it. That's how it works. So When people are saying, well, you talk about all this and you talk about all that, but what's the solution? The solution has been and is always been you and me. All the pieces of the puzzle coming together to make the big picture that is the grand scheme of things. The power of the spoken word, the power of the pen, the power of your actions, and most of all, the most powerful weapon you got in the arsenal against darkness is your love. If you unload your
that
heart...
That is the big one.
That's it.
Exactly.
If you unload your heart, it fills itself back up.
Exactly. The power of the word. You know, if you express yourself through love, then you will achieve more. If you express yourself through the power of fear and intimidation, you know, you just end up in a fight.
Well, I believe in my God, and I believe in my faith, and I utilize that faith because I know what I was told. I know what was prophesied. I know the potential. You know, if I'm given a hammer, I could go out and make an attempt to build a house. Somewhere I could find a nail and a board, maybe two boards, and I could nail these two boards together and make me a teepee or something. But it'll never get done if I don't get up and do it. None of it will. You know, like I said,
I'm just thinking the ideal Christmas gift for you is a hammer and a box of screws.
Yeah. Then I'd have to go get a screwdriver for the screws.
Or a file.
As crazy,
sharpen them up a bit more.
As crazy as it sounds, you probably got a toolbox at your house that has tools in it that I don't, and I got tools in my box that you don't. You got knowledge how to use certain tools and vice versa. And together, you and I could do some amazing things. By ourselves, we might struggle a bit. We might have to go out and try to recruit or pay for some help. But could you imagine if everyone on this planet brought their toolbox and their knowledge together, and we decided we were going to get out there and fix what is broken in the world? It's unlimited.
For sure. But more to the point, the crazy inventions we could come up with rather than fixing what's broken.
Yeah. You know, if I owned a business, I'd want to find the smartest, laziest man on the planet to hire as my employer or my employee. You know why? You have any idea why I would want the smartest, laziest man that there is?
Smart and lazy.
Yeah.
Because he'd be telling you what to do?
No, because what he would do is he would find simpler ways to get the work done that would make it easier for anybody else who wanted to come and work, which would make me more profitable because they would all be getting more done because every time they find a flaw in the system, they fix it because they don't want to work hard.
Got ya. I find that lazy people delegate more and they end up being called manager.
Yeah, sure. But if they find an easier way for everyone else to work, then it makes it more pleasant for everyone else. Hey, look, instead of straining your back, why don't you just use that little lift thing over there? It's real easy. But the boss said we can't use that. Well, they won't never know. The boss being the government, they said we can't use this knowledge. They said we can't talk to each other. They said we can't do what it is that we're doing. They said we couldn't shut down the mainstream media, but look what's happening.
Well, the mainstream media shot themselves in the foot.
Sure they did. And that's the way it all goes. Bad always seems to, you know, commerce seems to come around. You know, if you do something rotten, it seems to come back to you 10 times over. Maybe more than that. Who knows? But nonetheless...
I know what you're saying. The problem is the monopolies have got or had control for way too long. And the monopolies are the ones that are generating all the wars, because they need the resources, or to control the resources, not necessarily to have access, but to stop people having access. So if you destroy a country,
but there's one.
For instance,
there's one monopoly out
Africa,
there.
Africa, for instance. Oh God.
There's one monopoly out there that hasn't been exercised yet. And once that one monopoly decides to exercise its true power, then the things in this world are going to change. And they're going to change so drastically that we will literally start to see this world become what it is that we want. And that one monopoly out there is made up of many, many people who aren't in power. Many, many people who don't have a voice or don't have a choice or whatever. The people out there, the average Joe, the yous and eyes of the world who are right now believing that there ain't nothing we can do, they don't see it. They don't see enough movement going on. Like a crowd of people gathering to do something that's right. And then, hey, look, there's safety in numbers. Let's go over there to that crowd. They're not messing. The government's not messing with them because they're all speaking out together. You see what I'm saying?
Kind of.
The biggest monopoly in the world are we the people.
We the people aren't the monopoly. We are everything.
We have a monopoly on love. We love one another. We love life.
Yeah, it's not monopoly. I can't claim it as my own. Hey, I've got love and I'm prepared to share it, man.
Sure. But it's not being utilized. The biggest power, the biggest army on the planet isn't exercising its true power. It's not. We should be. We could.
I realize that, and I totally agree with you. I just can't exactly call it a monopoly.
Well, the terminology, I've never really...
Nice play on words.
Yeah, I'm really never good at the terminology, but I'm watching a standing army of epic proportions standing idly by and allowing a few bullies to literally tear across this planet and destroy their own people. You know, how can we stand by and allow this? The very few that actually go out of their comfort zone, you know, that lady that's feeding that little baby right there, if in the back of her mind she was afraid that that baby was diseased, and if this baby sneezed on her, she would get sick and deathly ill and stayed away from that baby would have never been saved. But she didn't think about that. She only thought about the difference of what's right and what's wrong, and she went full force into there. And she recruited other people around her to do what was right. And that baby is now what you see in the picture next to it. That's what I'm saying. It should be common sense to every living soul out there, the possibilities of what we can accomplish if we really want to put our true power to its ultimate test. I feel like we're being tested from whatever source it came from whatever, wherever we is. There's a song out there that Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell, says the world is full of kings and queens that blind your eyes and steal your dreams. And that's exactly what we see in real life.
Yeah, we are being tested. And because it's a spiritual war, they're testing our faith in our spiritual nature, which is a testing of us. You know, which side do we live on? Do we live in our mind and in hell, or do we live through our hearts and in love? Right? That's the test. When you finish this test at the end of your life and all your experiences added up and they weigh it on the scales, you know, well, that's Judgment Day, I guess. But I don't know, I've never been there to have experienced that one yet.
Someday we're all going to find it. We're all going to know at some point in time.
I
We're all going to know.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sav. I'm just going to throw this out there, right? Having said that, I haven't experienced it yet, you know, when I'm not born, or should I say, would live my life, I'm dead. Right? That's the end of me. Before I was born, what was I? Was I dead or not born? I mean, what I'm getting at is, surely death is the same as being not born? Do you see what I'm...
Yeah. I got an address.
So maybe I have experienced death before I was born, but just don't remember it.
Well, we're all going to find out the true answers, but before we end this night's roundtable, Patty Walking Turtle over there in the TCT chat room made a comment, says, I do think that we have the solutions, but there is a lot of difficult work to do. Moving out of the control is just one issue. Providing free energy is another. But we... somebody scrolled up on me. I'm going to have to get back up there real quick. All right. Do-do-do-do. Where was I? Providing free energy is another, but we have to deal with the extremist issues on all fronts, not just religious fronts, nationalist and political fronts. Lots of work. She went on to say, how do you change the mindset of people with extremist views? How do we bring it all together? Those who will not give up racism, bias, and such. The extremist front would probably be the easiest to overcome because the governments create them. Once the governments are gone, they will fade. See, this is like somebody one time said about how do you get a huge ship, like an aircraft carrier, to change course? And it takes a long time to get something that big to turn around. But for every little bit that you do, no matter which direction you're coming from, you keep picking at it until finally that ship makes a turn, a hard arc to wherever safety is or whatever. The only way that you're ever going to get rid of extremists goes all the way back down to the little Palestinian girls and the reporter asking the Palestinian girls, do you ever want peace with Israel? And they said, no, we don't ever want peace with Israel. We hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy. But flip that coin over to the other side of the fence and ask the little Israeli girls the same question, and they'll probably say the same answer. And you can say that in any particular instance out there, the Hatfield McCoys, any wars, any extremist out there who believe that, you know, they're justifying by the past actions of other, the violence in the home whenever there's an abusive parent who thinks themselves to be the almighty or whatever, and they torment their own loved ones, they abuse their children. Until those chains are broken, if I'm an abused child and I know that that was a terrible life and I continue on through my life and I abuse my children, then it will never change. Sometime we have to learn how to break the chains. We have to find forgiveness in each other and ourselves, and we need to move forward to doing what's right. And that in itself seems like such an overwhelming task. How do you forgive somebody who has been tormenting you for a lifetime or longer? It's just not possible in some people's minds. But as long as we're willing to go to war for the folks that continue to start the wars, there's always going to be a war. There's always going to be somebody who's upset because they see that somebody else is doing better than they're doing. The true scales of justice are so far out of balance. And in order to bring about a real change, it will take a miracle of biblical proportions. That's why that pastor said, well, you know, one man can never bring about peace on the earth. There's only, you know, one entity that would ever be able to accomplish that, and will bring a literal heaven on earth. But that overlooks every single other man on this planet, every single other woman and child, that their potential combined could literally do what that lady did on such a grand scale that we could, if we chose to do so, fix it all. Now, like I said, may not ever happen. The choice is up to you. It's up to you, the individual, what you do with your life. Every morning, you're given a fresh sunrise. Just a clean slate. You either repeat what you did yesterday, or you go on to do something better for today. We can't change the past for any of our nations. We can't change the past of the wars. We can't change the past mistakes, the past atrocities. But what we can change is the new day, every day. We got that potential. The Knights of the Round Table is trying to point that out to you. The Knights of the Round Table is trying to bring all the brilliant individuals like Sky Blue and Raymond and Barry and everybody else, Patty and Barbara Three Crow and everybody else, Stephen Gibbons in the chat room. We're trying to bring these people to the table. Because if you got a general consensus and brilliance, more brilliance piled on top of more ideas and solutions, and you keep pumping that out there and keep pumping it out there, eventually something's got to take. Somebody's going to hear this. Somebody's going to hear any number of the many podcasts of all the ideas and all the solutions, everything from alternative energy to alternative medicine to possibilities to hope, peace, and love, and miracles created by individuals who stepped outside of their comfort zone and literally proved to the world that if you believe something's possible, you can make it so. If we are successful in our mission and we never get to taste the fruits of our labor, what we do today as the founding fathers of our children and our children's children's future will be so profound that someday, wherever we're at, and we can look back on this earth and we can see what we helped create. One man building a house by himself might get the job done eventually. But thousands of men, millions, billions, working on that same house will get it done in short order. That's the Knights of the Round Table, folks. We need each and every one of you to do your thing. If you can sing like an angel, now's the time in history to stand up and do so. If you're a chef, a cook, anybody with any kind of talent, feed somebody. Cook them the most glorious meal fit for a king. Do what is in your power to make it better for one person in this world. And you'll find that you'll break those chains to where those people will do the same. That's the dream. And it's a tall order. But the idea, the solutions, the crossroads that we stand on, the resources that we have access to, the choice is all up to you, each and every one. So before we get out of here, Sky Blue, you got any last words of wisdom?
Yes, I guess so. For all the listeners out there, if you woke up this morning, smile. Carry that smile throughout the rest of the day. Smile at others. Smile. Smile your head off. Keep smiling until you're sore and sick of smiling. But just smile. And the reason why I say that is your smile will make the world a much brighter and happier place for all around you. So, you know, no matter how miserable you feel, just smile. You'll feel better.
You want to talk about free energy?
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to say. Yeah, if you want to talk about free energy, speak to Shaz. And exactly, your smile is, it generates endorphins in you.
Yeah, that's what I was, energy that you, that's what you I was get, about yeah, to say. Yeah. Imagine 9 billion people smiling at the same time. You want to talk about free energy? Ting. It's possible.
Well, yeah. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to air my opinions, Shaz.
Well, thanks for honoring me with your presence, brother.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Well, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Like I say at the end of every show, if you believe in what you heard here, please pass the message around, because, you know, one man shouting on the mountain's only as good as those number of people that hear it and take it to heart, you know. But I'm going to keep shouting, even if I was one lone man standing on the mountain, and we've done this before. I've been... Oh, King Shaziz the Terrible sitting up here in front of the microphone when all the knights were out fighting dragons and such, or getting some beauty sleep. I shout it out, and I'll keep on shouting it out. I'll do it as long as I have a breath, because I look out into this world and I see where we could be as opposed to where we are. I see the potential. I see the amazing amount of resources that we have at our fingertips, including this crazy internet that can take you, it can make you or break you. We are standing at a crossroads right now. We have a potential right now to decide. There's a battle going on. Battle between good and evil. However you want to define that. Between right and wrong. But it's definitely, without a doubt, a battle going on. I think the people are starting to gain ground. And I think that if we keep the ball rolling, keep the words flowing, keep the love pouring out of the hearts, worst case scenario, we gave it our best shot. Someday we'll all learn what the truth is. But I guarantee you, no matter what path you're on, the road ends up at the same spot. And we'll all get there eventually. Some of them just going to take a rough road. It's as simple as that. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. See you next time.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh. How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would feel... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what? want a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that our quiet dancing able. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Oh!